Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, wrapping up E3 2011. My name is Garnet Lee, and I have a cast here that is going to absolutely go down as one of the most legendary 2 hours you have ever had in your ears. Starting to my left is Mr. Jeff Cannata.
Hey, guys, it's two N's, one T, but three E's this week for me.
That's right.
How do you get three, too early for that. That's way confusing. Yeah. How do you have three E's?
Well, it's E3.
I need a writer.
Oh, gotcha. All right.
Can we start? I want a writer.
That's Mr. That's him. That's Luke Smith right there, folks.
One L, a U, and a hangover?
L, a U, and a hangover. Other end of the table is Mr. Shane Bettenhausen.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. It's been a long week.
Yeah. Look, dude, come on. Punch it up.
I need more coffee.
All right, he's going to punch it up. And then surrounding us in the background, waiting in the wings to swoop in here and take on the mics here in later segments, are Mr. John Davison, Mark McDonald, and Andrew Pfister.
The whole cast, we are united.
Bursting at the seams with awesome this week.
We are bursting at the seams with awesome. All right, so the format is that we're just doing a show.
Who needs a format?
Yeah. There's no pool here, there's no booze, but like, it's 9:30 in the morning, so of course not.
Actually, there's not a lot of things.
So where should we start off? We'll start off, I guess, with talking about press conferences. First one was Microsoft. I already wrote my editorial about how kind of sleepy I was through the whole thing. What do you guys think about that one?
Well, it wasn't, you know, hard to guess what was going to be there since all of it was up on the website before the press conference to begin with.
So
that was kind of a mistake. But, you know, I think everyone expected them to deliver on the Kinect promise of last year. And they did. They showed tons of Kinect games, whether you love them or not. But they made a big focus.
Yeah,
they
if you like talking to your machine, obviously now Kinect is your system.
I feel like I'm getting old. Because as I was watching the press conference, and Brian Intar and Ryan Payton and I were watching it at Brian's house here in Santa Monica, I felt like it was really core focused for like the first half. And then when I was reading feedback on GAF, they all felt like there wasn't enough core. And I
actually
Two Halo games isn't enough for the core.
I felt like there was plenty of like, I felt like there was plenty for all audiences. Like I understand the, like maybe people aren't into the voice.
Two Halos and a Gears of War. What more do you want?
I mean, well, and a Call of Duty.
And a Forza.
Croft orgasm sounds.
And Forza.
I mean, who's going to, I mean, really? Like, seriously, like you watched it. You saw the same trailer I did, right? She came like 15 times during that.
She's, you know, seriously, becoming a woman on her own in a journey.
Yeah, like they're like
of discovery.
This is where it all began for Lara Croft. And like she had to wait till she was 21 to start finishing. Poor girl. Seriously.
Well, I like
didn't you have a counselor at church camp?
But Luke, I gotta say, I'm so happy that Square.
Evidently, it isn't that early.
But Luke, I'm happy because Square Enix has kind of given her like some Tetsuya Nomura hair, so I feel a lot more comfortable about being attracted to her.
So. You okay, Garnet?
I love it because I have no affinity for that game, and that totally summed up.
What are you talking about?
You
love Tomb Raider. You've talked about Tomb Raider every.
I thought we were
going to
sit here and talk for two fucking hours about Tomb Raider and how many times you saw it, and I was all prepared.
No, I love
I have
Tomb Raider.
Like 36 more orgasm jokes.
That's not Tomb Raider.
Did anybody play the behind closed doors demo of Tomb Raider? I heard it was much better than what anybody else saw.
It was the same thing. It's just the same thing. They just proved that the controller works. It was strictly for judging.
I think it looks cool. I liked Heavy Rain.
I heard it looks as good as Uncharted.
I thought it looked really good.
It's totally different. It's totally different. They bring the camera in way too close. They're all about like this dramatic action. And so they've turned everything into QTEs. I'm so sick of QTEs after this week. As a matter of fact, the best thing that happened was the last thing that I saw yesterday was Uncharted. And
3 Dark Drake's Deception or Uncharted Golden Shower for the PSP Vita.
Puts the P in PSP.
I'm not going to be able to catch my breath in this whole show if you laugh so much.
What's the real title? What is it? It's that, right?
Golden
Abyss.
I don't remember. Abyss, yeah, that's right.
It's not Golden Shower.
Whatever.
Anyway, so I'm watching Uncharted 3 and they did the demo. They did a live demo. Evan was driving of the escape from the airport. Where Drake breaks in, you know, busts over the fence, goes through the container yard, gets onto the airplane as the airplane's taking off the cargo plane, and then he has like this fight with this big Russian dude.
That looks amazing. They showed part of that in the trailer, yeah.
Okay, so the fight with the Russian dude, after all these QTE games, like Lara's shit, here is a real fight. Like, they're just having a fist fight. I'm like, so Evan, is that like a real fight? Like, he's like totally dynamic. Anything can happen up there. It's like, we're just fighting. I'm like, so how come he doesn't just throw you off the back of the plane? Because he like kept choke holding him. He's like, well...
That wouldn't be a very fun game, Garnet.
No, he said, well, for the demo, we disabled that and put a little wall around the plane so I couldn't get thrown off.
And you're like, so not anything can happen.
Yeah. Well, no, because that's going to be down in the game. In the game, you will be able to be thrown off of there.
Do you think that when you're thrown off there, then you'll land in the desert and your adventure
and
will
you'll
continue
die
from there? Yeah.
And you'll die.
So not anything.
And you'll have to start over. But I'm saying it was really cool after all those QTE style stuff. Like, like why is Lara Croft escaping and it's press left on the stick? Wait. Press right.
So
press left.
This is not the Tomb Raider you wanted.
No. Okay. So, no, and vulnerable, and for all of, I mean, it was really funny, but, like, vulnerable Lara, come on, like, you made Lara a superstar already, like, don't go back and try and rewrite her into this, like, oh, I'm so helpless and I'm in distress.
I don't think she was helpless.
She's discovering herself.
She is self-discovery.
It's a quest and tale of self-discovery.
Okay, back to Microsoft press conference, and specifically, you know, Star Wars Connect was the big game for the core last year, the big, you know, what everyone thought was gonna be for the core, and it's kind of looks like it's more for kids a little bit.
But it looks great, doesn't it?
That's because the Star Wars franchise is more for kids now.
Clone Wars is definitely.
I mean, I think the whole franchise is. I mean, that's sadly something we all have to admit.
I guess you're right. So you want to group that with like Sesame Street and Disneyland, then it's not with Fable and, you know, the Crytek game as like the games for the core.
You think that, like, what'd you think of the Fable game? I'm gonna drive a carriage around a world.
I thought the magic stuff looked good. I understand why I'm on the show this week. It's to be the anti-cynicism guy.
Well, the power of Luke is sort of like just wafting out through the room.
And I'm happy to fill that role. I thought the magic casting stuff was cool, and I could totally get into that. Now, I don't know, I didn't play it. I don't know if any of you guys did, but I don't know how much the on-rails stuff will be distracting and annoying, but the idea of being fucking Harry Potter.
Well, what do you mean the on-rail part? Like when you get off the carriage?
Yeah.
Okay, so according to Peter, who gave me a demo later, that's very little of the game. Mm. Most of the game is on the carriage. Like you go adventuring.
Carriage quest.
You go adventuring on the carriage. As a matter of fact, at one point he's showing us, oh, look, there's a cave over there. We could drive our carriage down the cave. I'm like, wait, how the fuck drives the carriage down the cave?
Wait a minute. You're certain that most of the game is carriage.
That is exactly what he said.
It's a new carriage-based
because
genre.
Because their thing that they got into, you know, they always have like a thing that they're building the game around, is how great it feels to sit there with the reins in your hands and drive the carriage.
Okay, another Kinect thing. I'm curious. The Ghost Recon, they finally found a way to shoot with Kinect. Have you seen this one?
No, I did. Could
you do it right now for us?
This thing right here?
It's like grabbing a boob.
Well,
it's strip club.
It's like reverse grabbing. Like,
no, because you're still doing the same thing. You're just doing this.
I thought you were opening your hand to fire. Looked like he was
opening your hand to
you
fire.
You always burst fire to be successful in games. What am I doing? Copping feel.
You're copping like a quick feel.
Yeah.
But do you think that works? Is that the solution?
You're obviously copping a feel to new Lara Croft.
Yeah.
Not old, because her hand is small.
Does she like it or not like it? She doesn't really know
what to think of. She's discovering.
Did anybody see that? I can never remember the name of it. The puppet Western shooter. Was it
Gunstringer?
I thought that looked cool.
What was that?
It's the guys who made Comic Jumper and all those other game. It does look cool, and it's the first downloadable
Explosion Man.
XBLA game. But it is kind of a thinly veiled remake. The concept of the levels is very close to Comic Jumper. It has a new coat of paint and has Kinect controls. So I think as a download game, that's fine. But it isn't.
Wait a minute. I don't understand how it's like Comic Jumper. It looks more like Panzer Dragoon Order to me.
There are a lot of forward-scrolling levels in Comic Jumper. Did you play Comic Jumper?
And those, I did not play
it. If you actually play Comic Jumper, which is a really repetitive game, and seeing this, like, wow, a lot of these ideas were kind of similar to that, but I think the Kinect interface will make it fresh. So I'm excited.
And they said they might be actually expanding it to a full title instead of a downloadable.
Okay.
And you shoot in that game using, you know, you would, like pointing your finger and
that
having
works.
Your thumb in the air. Yeah, and you go up and down to shoot. It looked kind of fun. I didn't actually play it, but it looked cool.
You're not convincing me very.
But I gotta say, as someone who owns both a Kinect and a Move, I came away from E3 not super compelled to buy lots of Kinect and Move games. So that was
all right.
I thought Mass Effect with the Kinect looked awesome.
The talking or the giving the squad command.
Yeah,
command.
We've seen stuff like that before, but now I don't have to wear a headset, and it might hopefully.
Really,
work
I think the squad
well.
Command sounded potentially really janky. Like the last thing I want to be is stuck in a big firefight and going, move to the cover. Wait, not going to the right spot. No, not you. It's only like linking to certain words. You have to use the right word. You have to get the word to connect, and then you still have to tell it where you want it to go. I can do that with a stick and a button in about 2 seconds.
Well, but you can still do it with a stick and a button, but for certain things like singularity, you know, like whatever, character name, singularity, I think that's kind of rad.
See, now, I use video games a lot to distract myself when I'm having to have phone conversations with people, so I'm just really concerned about any voice stuff anyway. Like, I don't want to have to, like, my parents are going to be like, what are you doing? They already ask what I'm doing when I feel like I'm tuning them out when they're yammering about, prattling on about how pregnant someone is. Like, really, like, to have to explain that now, too, like, this is going to be bad.
I thought the like role-playing game section was pretty cool, because then that's a little involving.
That one's interesting, because... Just
Luke
like all the other
like
Mass Effect,
like, well, Luke just grimaced.
But is it making it more cumbersome than just pressing the button?
Well, just like all the other Mass Effect games, what the prompt is not what he actually says. So I think it actually removes immersion, because you say something as if you're talking to the character, and then he interprets that in his own words.
You're actually just whispering into his ear. Say this.
It's like Roxanne.
Be a renegade.
All right, so basically, between the four of us, we don't like voice command for any of it, and that was Microsoft's answer to bringing Kinect into more hardcore games.
I think the thing that voice command is going to be best for is just searching for content.
Like, oh, that all works.
The
disagreement.
The dashboard stuff's awesome.
Yeah. I want to come out with a game called Bong Bing, so you can go Xbox, Bing Bong Bing.
That's racist. But so yeah, Move. Move, I think, sure, Resistance, and what else? There's a lot of first-person shooters at Sony's conference. I'm sure they all play better with Move and that big gun crazy
thing.
Dude,
but both those conferences are weird in that...
I don't know, man. Have you played Killzone with it?
No.
Yeah, not... No.
Oh, I like it. If you use the gun, if you use that whole massive sharpshooter
thing. The Sega Menacer thing?
Yeah, if you use the...
No, I've played it with that.
I think the sharpshooter thing was a fun, casual experience.
I would pay so much money to have video of you playing in your living room. Just, you, like, come home after a hard day of working out and have some wine and, like, Gruyere or whatever cheese you tweet about eating, and then sit down with a big old fucking controller.
Okay, I don't want to skip ahead, but you know what I want to see you playing? I want to see you playing with your Wii U on a giant blaster where you're doing, like, Rear Window spying on Reggie. Like, what was that? Like, in the Nintendo Press conference, seriously, what? It was like Silent Scope and Miyamoto was like masturbating. Like, what was that?
There will never be video of that.
No, you
I was there, yes.
Yeah.
See, the thing is, having been to Japan a number of times, you can picture like this crazy movie that they're like thinking of.
If you're watching like, you know, Spike TV at 3 a.m, there is a commercial for like a thing for Granny to like spy on her neighbors with audio. If you're, anybody know. It's kind of like that. But I don't know what Nintendo's up to with that thing.
Watching different channels, I guess. Then. Yeah.
All right, so the comparison I was going to make between Microsoft and Sony as the bridge to talk about Sony stuff. Back when we were trying to do that, yes. Was that both of them, I thought, did really weird things with their biggest properties in that, we got the Halo anniversary announcement, and they didn't even get any time on stage other than, like, a crappy trailer. It's like, here's your video. All right, kids, you're getting Halo. Bye.
Well, what else do they need to show? It's Halo, and it looks nicer.
Well, but the multiplayer
this... Why are you thinking about it? What do they need to show? What do they show to get people excited? Like, you're fucking doing Halo. It's supposed to be a big deal anniversary. Like, bring it out. Let people play it. Show it some. Don't just have a narrated trailer. It's Halo. You remember it. It's awesome. Come play it again.
They got, what, an hour, 90 minutes to serve a whole
right,
bunch of
audiences.
Right,
and they put a bunch of other crap in there. I'm saying, where's the prioritization? It's the same thing that happened on the Sony stage. You've got Uncharted 3 to start with, which, by the way, screws everybody after that. You give Resistance
so damn good.
You give Resistance like a run on and push off the stage.
How about that great game Untold Legends 4? I mean, Rune. That they spent like 7 minutes on. Like, what was that?
And then they spend all that time
on
those
to prove that the Vita PS3 sort of.
Well, how about showing Wipeout, which is awesome, which is playable right now?
Exactly.
Like, instead, they showed Rune. I was like, huh?
Where was Journey?
Yeah.
Well, Journey was one of my games. Having played that for an hour, it's tough to show. Yeah. And then they showed like that weird like 3D Move goblin hunting game that was just.
And meanwhile, they don't show Twisted Metal.
Right. So like both of those conferences had very weird priorities, very weird ways that they didn't put like their biggest best foot forward, but like spent a lot of time trying to show, oh, we know you know about those things. We're going to show you some other stuff.
But I got to say, the Sony conference made me personally very happy because a game that my company's been working on was included. In that conference, Dragon's Crown by VanillaWare, and it was one of the last games they showed for PS Vita on the reel.
And people like
and nobody knew what it was. And everybody was excited.
Well, because you couldn't tell because the logo is kind of hard to read and it didn't say what it was. But yeah, it's you know, it's a 2D kind of like Guardian Heroes meets Diablo meets Monster Hunter with super sexy women RPG.
I was gonna say meets porn
meets yeah you know some
there were a lot of weird titles
voluptuous
there.
Assets.
Was that a Was that like Shinobi Gold that was also in there?
No, that's Shinobo 2, which is like some a sequel to a game that only came out in Japan. But okay. it looks really good, actually. So
I thought the Vita stuff was great, and the price points is awesome. Oh. I really came out of the Sony conference enthused.
Yeah, the price point is so aggressive. I mean, it's kind of a firing shot at the 3DS.
Absolutely.
Straight up.
It's hard to go to the Nintendo conference after that and see video of 3DS games and not be thinking of Vita the whole time and going, oh, well, that doesn't look as good. But Nintendo has a problem because both of the systems that they're debuting now are, you have to experience them firsthand to really get what is special about them. It doesn't come across in video. It doesn't come across in screenshots. It's a tough sell for that.
Sometimes it doesn't come across in experiencing it.
Oh, come on. Did you play the Wii U?
So what I did was I went into the little area where there was the Wii U, and I saw the commenters in line, and I motioned over to one of the ladies working in the booth and said, I'd like to play this. And she gave me the controller, and all I wanted to do was hold the thing. I just wanted to hold it.
The lady or the controller?
It's lighter than...
In this case, I think both, actually,
but
if
Luke,
I remember.
It's lighter than an iPad.
It's way lighter than I thought it would be, yeah.
That's because it doesn't have much guts in it, you know?
Yeah,
it doesn't have to actually compute much.
Right.
So you guys probably know more about this than I do. How does it, like, can I play with multiple? Can I have multiple screens hooked into
my
phone?
They were so cagey about that.
There's a story that came out late yesterday that Miyamoto thinks that depending on what the game's doing, that it's theoretically possible they could support
but
multiple
But they're not
going
to sell the Wii U controller separately. You only get it bundled with the controller.
The truth is, they don't know. Don't know what the hardware is going to be.
And you can play on the hardware with other controllers that have different button configurations.
All the legacy Wii peripherals are still compatible. And so all the multiplayer concepts are one Wii U controller and four Wiimotes.
Well, there's a lot. The Ubisoft showed that Killer Freaks from Outer Space. They were showing playing with a classic controller for dual sticks to play the FPS, and then having the Wii U controller do other stuff.
You can still use the Wii Wheel. You can still use Wii Fit.
But they don't know. I mean, I don't think that the actual box, the controller is kind of set.
Luke's about to explode to the top of his forehead.
All the specs are confirmed. You can go to the website right now, read all of it. The architecture is very close to 360.
Yeah.
The internal architecture?
Yeah, it's all there.
I hadn't seen that yet.
Yep.
So
all up.
Saying that that's true, then third-party developers are going to look at the Wii as another opportunity to port to. Fine.
Yes.
Makes sense.
That's the whole idea.
However.
Just
a sec. Any game that has split-screen functionality, there are a handful of them. Any game that still does that has to account for two separate control inputs then, where you have one that has, let's say, four triggers, like the analog being trigger, trigger, bumper, bumper. And then if I'm playing with my controller and my Wiimote, I'm down, two inputs? So you're going to have to simplify control schemes. Like, if you can't account for... The point I'm trying to make is if you have multiple control schemes and multiple button configurations, you're just going to complicate things even further. So that's something I need to come up with a solution for, whether it's another controller that doesn't have a screen on it, that has all the proper button inputs, all that's going to be an issue.
Couldn't you just say, if we're going to do split screen, that we're not going to support the Wii U controller for that and only support classic controller or Wii controller?
That's the whole point of having the Wii U controller.
Yeah,
But if it's split screen, I disagree.
Yeah, but just when the Darksiders guys go to set out and say, okay, well, let's say, and they're not going to, so let's say Jimmy's Chicken Shack is going to make a game, and their game is going to be on PS3, 360, and Wii U. And it uses all the buttons on PS3 and 360.
Right.
And it's split screen.
Okay.
How are they gonna map those buttons when they're six inputs down with a Wiimote because they can't play split screen?
Play with the classic controller.
They'll just say play with the classic controller.
I have no idea.
You can use two Wiimotes.
It has the exact amount of buttons that everything else does.
Yeah. So basically, the new controller.
So why do I want a Wii U then?
Because it's in HD. It has more processing power, and you'll get this new controller that you can play different sorts of game experiences with.
Yeah, just seeing New Super Mario Brothers in HD at the booth, I was like, well, that's justifying it right there for me.
I'm just old. I'm old.
New Super Mario Brothers Me, which is called, I'll play it, but does it look as good as it needs to look? No, not really. It looks like a high-res Wii game.
Real early.
Is it? That screenshot leaked out 6 months ago. People remember that game. It did.
Well, I think the thing that stood out to me about it is going to a true 16:9 widescreen, high-res experience in Mario really opened up the screen from a point of view sort of standpoint. You had a much larger point of view, and I don't know if I liked that.
What a paradigm shift.
And that little Zelda mock-up.
2005 technology.
The Zelda mock-up
is definitely the best looking thing there. The sparrow thing being the second, but the Zelda thing, you know, I was like, fool me once, fool me twice. Remember GameCube realistic Zelda? It looks so close to that, but this is really.
You're talking about the HD experience where they like showing him fighting a spider and you can like fiddle around with the pad.
And my question was whether or not that was actually made by NCL internally. And Kohler, I mean, he must have ran it by now. He told me yesterday that like it wasn't completely made internally.
Did you guys play Chase Me and Shoot Me?
Chase Me is just Pac-Man Versus, which I love.
Yeah.
But it's not a new idea.
No, it's not a new idea, but it works pretty darn well.
It worked pretty well with connectivity on my GameCube and my GBA cables, like Zelda Four Swords. I mean, are these new ideas?
I really liked the use of the Wii Pad as a extra controller to go with the four controllers because it opened up something different. And even if it's been sort of done before, I thought that that's why, like, when you're talking about split screen, I don't think that you don't need to worry about split screen played with the Wii U controller because that's not the point of the Wii U controller. The point of the Wii U controller...
Playing Othello while you're, you know, in the kitchen.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not about play. No.
It's about weighing yourself in the bathroom.
No.
That's the things they showed me.
I know that's some of the things they showed you, but that's them, like, keeping that crossover appeal, showing that, like,
Wii U is for everyone. They're bringing the hardcore back as, hey, you can play your dude bro games,
right.
And you can play Mario, and you can weigh yourself and play Angry Birds.
That's exactly it. Why did Luke get up?
He's angry.
I think he was tired.
I facilitated a line change.
He's facilitated a change.
All right, that's Mr. John Davison.
Listening to you guys, it was kind of a good example. I think it's going to be a huge flop for them.
Really?
Hearing you guys talk about it just empowers that idea.
You think it's trying to do too many things?
I think it's like there's a bunch of other stuff already out there that's already doing it better. And like,
well, like, you know, when it showed like video, like FaceTime video chat, I'm like, well, it's cool that Nintendo has a console that does that, but well, I already have devices that do
that. Yeah, I already have devices that do that, and it looks better, and you know. And it looks like a Fisher-Price toy.
It looks like a THQ U-Draw tablet.
Right, and it's like a resistive screen. So, like, every kid from the age of, like, one up now is used to a glass screen that they can do multi-touch and swipe. I mean, like, they know how to do the gestures. And the fucking Wii U doesn't support any of it.
Wait, it doesn't have multi-touch?
No.
Single touch.
It's a DS screen. It's a big DS screen. Yeah.
I thought the screen was better than a big DS.
I thought so too.
Come on, like,
but in terms of in terms of how you interact with it, it's a DS screen. It's a plastic, shitty, resistive screen.
Whoa.
That's better with a stylus than it is with a finger. That's a problem.
So it is really
Luke,
cheap.
That was the straight line that was left there for you, and you weren't even here to take advantage of it.
So it must be cheap to produce, actually, then. Very cheap to produce.
Right, yeah. It's not, I mean, everyone's like, oh, wow, Nintendo's taken the best bits of the iPad and applied it to the Wii. No, they didn't. They took the shit they did years ago on the DS and applied it to the Wii.
Wow, the poopy pants is strong in here.
Yeah, the poopy pants are very strong. I mean, that leads me to think that there will be some interesting ways to convert DS titles to
I'm sure you'll be able to download them. I'm sure you can be able to download them again from a store. And pay full price for them again.
Yeah. I think the Fisher Price argument is a little trollish because I held the thing and there are plenty of devices that I own that have matte plastic finish that have a similar sort of rounded, like, what would you want it to look like? Like this? Like an iPad?
It feels cheap and plasticky. And I think, but the more important, the more important thing is the fact that what have become the standards on two other platforms that are in nearly, you know, like most people that have a game system have either an Android or an iOS device.
Yes.
And it isn't even close to parity to the input that you can do with one of those devices.
I think you make a great point.
Just because it doesn't have dual touch?
Multi-touch is massive for people now. Like the fact
it's expected,
that you
as you say.
It's an expectation. Like Virgin Mobile now have like a $20 phone that has multi-touch. You know, it's...
I think that for me, the more scratch my head thing is that they seem, at least what they showed, especially for the hardcore application of the hardware, is this reliance on the gyroscope and the accelerometer. And I don't think that's what people want.
Well, yeah, like the shield game, like it's a neat little mini game for Mario Party, but is that a product? Like,
but it looked like a lot
dude, those
of
were
the,
just demos. Come on, those were tech demos.
Some of those demos we've seen in the past have grown into full games.
Have you seen Hammer?
I saw the submarine game came out for 3DS. That's like a mini game they're charging full price for.
The use of FPS as I'm looking through this window and I'm moving around in real space, and I don't think the hardcore want that.
It's a gimmick. No. It's a cool gimmick, but
it's cool sometimes. It doesn't make it more precise.
The stuff that blew me away actually in Shield was did you try looking up?
No.
Like, if you hold the controller over your head, the sky was there. That was
really?
Strange.
That's kind of cool.
So, like, they were doing some interesting stuff, but I think the gap between now and when the thing actually comes out and what people are starting to do with other mobile things and the way, like, they're going to be... This isn't Nintendo kind of leading. They're, in a lot of ways, they're sort of catching up with this as well. And, like, this is the first time where... it's starting to reek a little of like, oh shit, we got left behind by people that we weren't expecting.
But yeah, exact people we weren't expecting is the key phrase there, Apple. Because it's Apple, it's not Nintendo. I mean, it's not
but
Microsoft,
this thing isn't a mobile device. They're not even entertaining.
But it's that lifestyle.
It's the lifestyle, right? And it's what mobile devices have trained people to expect when they interact with something that it doesn't do.
Right? See, I see it as a response to those expectations, and we
they
know
missed.
I don't know.
If you use an iPad,
I think that's very early.
If you use
judgment.
An iPad around your house, like most of us do, I think this wouldn't completely replace that for us at all, right? No.
But that's not the intent of it. It's still a, like, come on, it's still Nintendo. They're still building a game console. The idea of this thing is still that it's a game controller, not some sort of multi-function internet-connected toy for big boys.
Didn't they say wasn't there a slide at the conference saying, we're connecting, like, online, you know, entertainment and games in a way like never before, you know?
Your television screen and your game console.
You can take, I think they are aiming for the same market as Apple, actually. I really do think they are.
Well, no, I think that they're having that be an additive goal. But I think that the thing we are all overlooking, because their press conference completely overlooked, is that it is delivering a HD graphics-ready console that has all these properties built in.
And so,
I don't even give a crap about the controller, really. I'm looking forward to all the experiences that I've grown to love through Nintendo
coming to me, Jeff,
with better graphics.
I agree. I was on the 8-4 Play podcast, I wanted it to be like a PlayStation. I wanted it to be just like an ultra Nintendo that plays great games and isn't trying to do anything crazy and weird. And like, at least it will play better looking first party Nintendo games than anything ever before. Yeah. And it'll play decent or, you know, completely, maybe even better ports of existing third party games. And as you know, I work for a third party publisher, and the fact that you could port all of the same game we're making for PS3 360 to this, and maybe add some cool functionality that is unique with the controller.
Four years later, they haven't proven able to break the code to get third-party developers to understand how to make good Wii games.
But
everything's just junk shovelware,
or dumbed-down ports of games. They were going to announce some big exclusives, and they didn't really get there. I mean, like, the Lego thing is maybe a big deal to families. It got kind of a muted response.
That was obviously they expected much more
out of
that.
Grand Theft Lego.
It was the most non-committal bunch of announcements I've ever seen. It's like, yeah, imagine if we did this, or think about the possibilities for this. It wasn't like, we're doing Battlefield, God damn it. And it's like, no, we could maybe do something like Battlefield 3, possibly.
The messaging was very strange because they walked out on stage and said, we get it. We haven't got the hardcore. The hardcore's disappointed. And then they proceeded to completely ignore the hardcore.
Well, no, they got it when they said Smash Brothers, and the crowd, like, you know, ejaculated all over itself. Like, when they announced Smash Brothers for 3DS and for Wii U, that's a huge deal.
3 years from now, maybe.
So you guys obviously did not think the Nintendo conference was, like, a big winner for them.
No, I thought it was.
I thought the messaging was bizarre.
If you want to dumb it down and who won E3, Nintendo won E3, but it wasn't an A-grade win. I don't think they put their best foot forward on this. I think what they're going to do actually is inspire a bunch of other things in the game space to actually overtake them before the thing releases.
The thing that's interesting that you brought up, Shane, which is these third parties who are bringing these multi-platform titles like Ubi mentioned Assassin's Creed and others, we are really going to have very specific differentiation between the added functionality of all those games between consoles, because you're going to have like a Mass Effect type added functionality for Kinect. And when these games come to all three consoles, and it's like, well, we got some Kinect stuff you can do on one of them. Ghost Recon, for example, you know, you got those Kinects, we can mess with your guns in real space, but on the Wii U, you can do this weird thing on your
send out drones or whatever.
Wii U controller. Yeah, it's going to be really different.
On PS3, Sony was like, oh, we're going to give you an old game along with it. Yeah. You get like the old Battlefield, and you get the old BioShock on PS3.
The best thing about Wii U is that it's the highest profile kind of and most formalized expression of multi-screening that anyone's done yet. Because everyone's sort of thinking about it and doing it, and we're hearing that there's going to be, you know, apps for some of the shooters that you can download for iPad that have tactical views on them, and Nintendo's built that idea right in. So I don't think it's what they intended, but what they are is my first multi-screen console experience.
My second. Yeah. After the DS, right? Yeah.
But it's like they're actually going to end up being the console that introduces the idea that, you know, that there is a way to have a secondary experience. And I think, I mean, like the Shuriken stuff and the golf thing was cute, but what's going to be, what I think what's going to really take is this idea of having the map, or you know, somewhere where you can control things from a much sort of like higher level on the device, and then what's going on the screen is separate.
Well, if you think about an application for Batman, for example, where you can like go into detective mode by holding up your controller, and you get a different view through your controller than you get on your television.
Metroid Prime would be fantastic that way.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a lot. I mean, and it is exciting. Like the director who made El Shaddai, we were talking about Wii U, and he's thinking of all these new ideas that he never could think of before, and he loves iPad, so he's excited. I think if other creative developers can like just wrap their brain around new concepts, I think it is good for the industry. Yeah. I'm not down on it. I am down on the name, though.
And I want Sony to think about the Vita as kind of a kind of souped-up companion thing in this way.
I think there's definitely potential there. Well, all right.
Can we talk about the Vita a little bit?
Yes, we can. We can do that when we come back on the other side. We'll take a little breath here to formulate our thoughts. We'll come back on the other side with Vita and get into many of the games of E3, of which we have a very long list. So stick around. We'll be back with that and more guests. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. There's like part of that sample that's missing, isn't it? Like, didn't you just have like
the part where we say game flap?
No, we do not. I'd like you to know, by the way, Mr. Jeff Cannata, that has infested the halls of
Damn
Gamefly
right.
now.
There are that's people. That's what like, I do. I infest like, people.
Call it the game flap. That's a terrible name. So we're back. We're going to talk about some Vita because Mr. John Davison wanted to. He's still here, but we've been joined now at the end of the table by the legendary Mark McDonald.
Hello.
From hailing all the way from Tokyo, where he works at 8-4 with Mr. John Riccardi and all the other fine folks.
Came here for this. Yes.
Mr. How's JJ doing?
He's doing good.
Yeah, how's the baby? Yeah.
He's enjoying not having us in the office, I'm sure. Little Epperson is doing well as well. Thank you for asking.
Well, shout out for JJ. Miss you, man. You're good. He's a good guy. I like JJ. Have fun.
Yeah, good guy.
Epperson.
Don't ask. Long story. Sergeant Pepper, we also call him.
Yes, because, well, now we're asking. Now we have to ask.
It's not a good story. Let's talk about PS Vita.
Oh well. Well, that might not be a good story either, depending on how John's temperature goes on that. He didn't really like the Wii U very much, but he Vita?
No, I don't like the Vita either.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, everything's fine.
We could do a much shorter podcast talking about the things we like.
Yeah. Let's get the stuff we don't like out of the way. And then, it's not that I don't like the Wii U. I just don't think it's as big of a deal as Nintendo think it is.
Okay. And the Vita?
Well, Luke's in the background as well, and I'm sure he will wonder. But I think the one thing that the Wii U and the Vita have, apart from the fact they both have silly names, is that they both obviously look like they were designed by committee, where everyone came into a conference room and said, "We need to have touchscreen, right? We got touchscreen and a gyroscope and microphone." And a camera.
Okay.
And sticks.
Now, wait. Well,
those are all sort
time
of...
Time
out. And
then they obviously went...
A device has now.
Yeah, they went one further. And it's like, we need touch on the back as well.
I'll entertain that notion for Wii U. But how can you say that a device that looks like a successor to the device it replaces is designed by committee? It looks like a PSP that has the features we wanted in it. Dual sticks. The features that make sense for it, a better screen.
Oh, no, I'm not the man, but the thing that pushed it over the edge for me was the reach around pad on the back. You know,
it's so you're still feeling now that they've started showing games like that's kind of gimmicky. You're feeling like that's
because
it's like, an arbitrary differentiator.
It's an arbitrary exactly. Like it's like, well, how can we like go to 11 on this? Let's make it so that every surface is touchable. And then the thing that really got it, that was like. It was did you all see Little Deviants?
Yes.
No.
I played it. Yeah, I played all the different.
Where you poke your finger through the back of the give it a little.
Sometimes to go to 11, you have to poke in the back.
I don't think they should call it rear touch.
You just naturally go
rear
to this
touch.
Sort of
the new Vatican game. I don't think that's a good idea.
You have this sort of natural tendency to go to this sort of like gentle middle finger sort of like diddle that you do with it. That like and you're sort of like you're playing it.
Tent the game.
Yeah, and you're aware that the woman like, that just handed
sure
you the
Sony
thing
did
is
not want
at
us talk about finger diddling from behind with their device.
They call it rear touch.
I do have to say, with that SoundShapes game, did any of you guys see that game?
That is pretty awesome.
I mean, that actually uses the back panel in an interesting way, and it's not actually the first way that you want to use it. It's that musical platformer by Jonathan Mack. Yeah. And you make your own levels in it and play them out on the fly and make music with them and do that. And you're making a lot of objects, moving them around the screen, but you're not using the front screen to do that, even though a lot of people's first instinct, again, like you guys were talking about, is to touch that front screen, do the pinch and the iPhone thing. But you use the back screen, and what that gives you is you don't have your big fucking fat finger
exactly
blocking, so you can see what you're doing, you can move things around, you can rotate it. I thought that was really cool.
And when making a track in Mod Nation Racers, when you want to push up a mountain,
you push from behind.
And when you want to push down a valley, you push on the front. So you're pushing in the back and the front, you know.
But has anybody...
So what you're saying is you use your fingers to bring out the peaks and valleys.
Let me show you. Come over here, Mark. No.
So has anybody played a game where that's camera control? Because I thought that that's what the back pad was going to be in like three quarters.
But it's got two sticks right there, dude. Why do you need that?
Any third-person shooter. Well, I don't know if you're using it for something else, weapon selection. Maybe I'm coming from the Monster Hunter. I've been in Japan too long.
I feel like the
point
Vita,
of view, but
I feel like the Vita is exactly what I wanted from my iPad and my iPhone. Whereas, it can play all those awesome multi-touch games that those devices do so well. But when I want twin sticks, I don't need them to be virtual. They're right there. I've got them.
Do you guys think that actually that Sony will start doing, because the Vita with the PS3 could do theoretically anything that the Wii U is doing, right? Do you think that they're going to start? Do you think they even thought of some of that stuff? Like that?
Well, thinking about it now.
I guarantee you somewhere, at Sony, somebody is working on that golf game. Somebody's working on that baseball game. Yeah.
And if it's not Sony, then, third parties are immediately going to look at it and go, wow, that was a pretty cool idea. Wait, we've got this device. We've got connectivity between the devices. Let's do this.
Right. They weren't really messaging that at all at this show. Even Sony could have easily come back and said, all that shit, everything that they showed, we could do that with the Vita and otherwise.
I think they need to do that. I'm trolling a bit with it. I think there's a lot of potential in Vita. I think it's more that it's kind of the right device at the wrong time for Sony. Now people's expectations of portable gaming is so affected by other stuff that what Nintendo and Sony have to overcome is the fact that their devices are big and bulky, and it's a backpack device, not a pocket.
It's not your thing that you have to carry with you anymore.
And it sounds glib, but it's not a phone, and that's sort of an issue for a lot of people. And it's for gamers, it's fantastic, but if they want to go beyond that, which both Nintendo and Sony are saying that it's expanding the market, and it's like, well, it's a big bulky second thing that you've got to remember to bring with you,
right?
That's going to be an issue for going really huge.
Well, so I agree. I don't think they've proven on large scale that people want to carry a dedicated gaming device to have richer experiences, because the whole thing about the PSP was we're going to deliver a higher fidelity portable gaming experience, which appealed, which had a strong ramp up, but then it hit its plateau and it very locked in at that level.
The difference is that always with the PSP and any DS, any other handheld previous to this, it was always a step down from what you had at home.
Right.
And there's almost no step down now. You have the exact same Uncharted experience. And that's a big deal for me. Yeah. I think it will be for others as well.
I'm gonna buy one. I'm not gonna buy the 3G one. I'll get the 250 one.
It's $50. Why not buy the 3G one? It has all.
Wait. Actually, why? My question about the 3G thing. I don't know how many people are talking about this, but it's not like you're not really downloading games out there on the 3G. You're not playing any intensive multiplayer game like a shooter or something that's going to be needing a lot of data. You're basically using it for updating your trophies, seeing what friends are online doing,
and near
asynchronous multiplayer and stuff like
someone
that.
Someone attacked your ruin stronghold.
Right.
I got the impression though that it was a subscription. It was an AT&T
I'm sure
account.
That's why it's only $50,
right? Because it's not like the iPad we used to be, right, where you could do the ad hoc. I want it, turn it on, turn it off. I don't think you're in, and it's not like a Kindle where it's bundled as part of the pricing. This is another whatever a 3G data plan is. How much do AT&T charge for that now? Based on my bill, it's $100, right?
So will anyone buy the 3G? Is anyone at this table?
I don't know. I have no need. Apparently on iPad, 60% of iPads now are the 3G one. So people
want to have that option of being able to use it.
But for
if you're using it for web browsing like an iPad, though, yeah. I understand it more than with the Vita. I just don't. I mean, if you were really, you could just be doing everything you were going to be doing at home. Then,
and the
Vita
makes the 3DS look overpriced.
Oh, absolutely. Well,
yeah.
The 3DS made the 3DS look overpriced.
I'm curious if Nintendo will respond as early as this holiday with a price drop to counter that.
Yeah.
So since you guys obviously are all iOS device fans, do you think that, I mean, one thing that the iPad did, you talk about, do people want to carry a dedicated device? Well, there's a lot of people that decided for the iPad that they were willing to carry a second backpack-sized dedicated device.
For me, the iPad is only on trips, and for me, it's a couch device.
Yeah, like,
me too.
Yeah, it's like it's my screen while we're watching TV, playing a game, playing Words with
Friends.
You
mean like a Wii U controller?
Yeah, but it does so much more, and I've already got one.
And a lot of the other people that I see using it, like using it for business, it's that instead of a regular notebook or something. Like, I don't think it's added.
I use it as my house PC because it turns on so much quicker than any other computer.
And to counter troll your troll, I can pick up my iPad and walk into another room, and it still does what it was doing.
You just counter-trolled my troll.
Because the Wii U controller, when you get out of range, it stops doing anything.
Like, well, look at you with your fancy multi-room house.
You know, actually, back on the
Wii U, excellent for studio apartments. I have one giant room that I can use my Kinect in. That's all I've got.
Come to Japan, all apartments are studio apartments.
There you go.
That might be one thing. But one thing on Wii U, while you guys were talking about it, that I wanted to bring up is I think actually there's... online is more important than ever for that system, and the reason why is if you've got the equivalent game, like the third-party games on 360, PS3, and Wii U, and you're deciding which one to buy, and the Wii U has like a map, or it has, you know, you can control your inventory or something on the screen. To me, the one thing that's going to decide whether or not I'm going to get that Wii U version or not is the online. Like, that was the reason I wasn't buying the PS3 version for a long time, was because the online functionality was better.
Well,
all
so
my
here's
friends
a benefit.
Were on the Xbox.
Nintendo doesn't like you to do voice chat, so there won't be any idiot trolls in your ear.
Well, there's voice chat on the Ghost Recon Online video that they showed at the Ubisoft thing.
Well, but didn't you see that they said that most of those videos were like pulled off of 360 and PC versions?
Was
that,
this is
a specific
one? At the developer roundtable. They showed a Wii U specific one with
so they're going to loosen up because remember when they did the talk out on for Animal Crossing that's like, oh, we don't really want people just talking to each other privately because that introduces all kinds.
Well,
I think this is a brand new Nintendo. I think this is
brand
Nintendo
new Nintendo
going yeah. Blood, do it. Cursing, more.
This is,
have some.
They did say we fucked up with online. Like Iwata, like a few weeks ago, said, like, we screwed up with online. And then Reggie said more recently that they're going to have a service that's going to compete with PSN and Xbox Live. They haven't said that before. They said their customers are different. They want it to be safe and what have you. But so I'm waiting to see what that online is going to be. Is it really going to be one, you know, login username? Are you going to pay for it? Are you not? I don't know. It sounds like they're going for more of the PSN model than the Xbox Live, but we'll have to see.
Did we talk about all the Vita you wanted to, John?
I don't know. What else do we need to talk about on Vita? I mean, like,
what about the games?
Sound Shapes is good.
I think Little Big Planet, I think that and Mod Nation, the fact that they talked to the other thing. I think the thing that we need to get past really quickly is everyone just needs to make their mind up on what control system they want to support, because I thought Golden thingy, like, it's like, so you can control him with the sticks, I can get on board with that, and it's like, okay, tilt, don't know about if I want to do that, or I can just point where I want him to go and he'll do it for me.
You see, John, that's a more accessible, casual experience. The fans of the series who always wanted to play the game and felt threatened
so I
by
just
it
set it down on the table and just be like, just get on with it, I'll watch.
Nathan Drake, climb the mountain.
That'll be right. Connect.
So I'll reach around
my,
and diddle,
my
and then
sarcasm
I'll watch.
There, if you didn't catch it, that was totally sarcastic. I don't. That's the silliest thing. Like dragging your finger across the.
Yeah, that
look,
was that.
Here's
was,
a wall. Let's climb the ledges by tracing a path.
That's
I
just
don't know.
That's
don't.
Just because they can right now. Yeah, but I think we need to get the path. The path.
Just
the,
because I can.
Yeah, and get to like what's really going to work. What I do like is apparently all the old games automatically map camera controls to the right stick on Vita at the system
level.
So the PS1 and whatever else they have in their emulation automatically has, if there's a camera control, that the right stick does it.
That's great.
Speaking of camera control, because I want to interject this because we're just on that subject. Did anyone else play Journey?
Yes.
The camera control system in Journey is really freaking cool. You use the six axis and it's gyroscope to look around by just looking around with the controller. That, like, dude, why has no one thought of that
Journey
before?
Journey is magic pony corns. It's
magic pony corns.
Have you not played Pony Corns? It's a great game.
Luke looks disgusted.
Pony Corns for iOS.
Yeah.
Is it that exciting? I mean, the game is overall, but the camera movement.
Oh, no, I just thought it was cool.
I had shades of early PS3, like, we have to use this feature somehow. Like, why not just put it on the damn right stick? Was there a problem with that? is there somebody uncomfortable with camera control?
Interesting.
I wish
you had been there, because Genova was, like, asking that question. We were talking about it, and I thought that it was cool because of the lack. This is not a controller heavy game. This is not a game where you're, like, punching a bunch of buttons. There's, you know, very simplistic controls. That the fidelity that they've developed through Flower, obviously, is there to use the controller in this way. It wasn't hard, and there's something it felt natural to, like, wander around in the world moving my character with a stick, and when I wanted to look around, just sort of looking around with the controller.
Yeah, my thing with that game company, and I love their games, I'm glad they're doing what they're doing, but it's like, don't get, you know, so into innovation at the expense of the stuff that the people playing the game, I think, really want. I think
there's a message for the whole industry right now.
Right. Well, let's talk about the awesome parts of Journey, because it's like 90% awesome. The one other thing that I really wanted out of it is, you know, the multiplayer, which I think is really actually cool.
Very cool.
You like kind of people come in and you can't actually talk to them. Nope. At first, I thought that was going to be annoying, but it's not at all. It's like, it's really interesting, the dynamic that you form with the person. I'm totally on board with that. But if I have this amazing adventure with somebody, you can never know right now who that person was.
Yep.
There's no way to ever get in contact.
You don't think
with
that's
them.
Awesome?
Call it a truck stop.
I think that's why they call it a truck
stop. They call
stop.
It rear touch.
Oh, but God. I mean, call it a truck stop. Oh, my God.
Why can't you? And hopefully, maybe it's not, you know, over. Maybe they'll do this. But at the end of the game, you see, like, here's the people that you know, played with or something like that. Like, become friends with them on
in the background, they've decided this is like the video game for senators who want to go out and find their friends.
Senator Wiener's going to love it.
Yeah, Senator Wiener's going to love it.
You should put it on PSP so you can snap pictures as well. Yeah.
But I think, I wish that game was on the show floor, because that's probably maybe my game of the show. Like, yeah. That game is just gorgeous. It controls really well.
So sidetracking aside,
don't do it justice.
I want to address the question you asked, because I think that that's really interesting that you want to make sure and go connect with those people, because I think part of the freedom that you have when you have those experiences with them is that, you know, at the end of it, that's it. You don't, there's no implied connection. There's no sense of, I have to.
It's like being 22.
It is. I mean, it is glory hole gaming.
Brings a whole new meaning to the phrase casual gaming.
But that's true. It is glory hole gaming. But that's part of it, is, you know, you're walking away from it.
Somebody trademark that.
It's already done. What do you think my new company's
going to
be called?
Glory Hole Games.
I do really like the idea of it, where you come in and you're kind of new. You don't kind of know what's going on. You run into somebody and their scarf is really long.
Yes.
It'll make more sense if you see the game.
Scarf.
But yes.
And it's glowing and pulsing.
As you go through the game, you basically are like knocking out these banners and they add to your scarf, and that just shows that you played the game a shitload. So instead of seeing, like, you know, it's basically the equivalent of seeing like badass armor on somebody in a MMO.
At the risk of submitting myself to all of your ridicule, I will say that the experience, there's a lot of games nowadays that are dance games where you dance. I had more of the experience of actually dancing with someone in Journey than I have ever had in a dance game, because I didn't know who they were. I didn't know how to communicate. And it was this sort of magical dance of movement and figuring out where to go because of how we related to each other.
Well, you're negotiating an unspoken language, right? You're negotiating a way that you can communicate with one another through whatever interaction tools they give you in the game,
like, which is very few.
Right, it's very few.
It's just like you hit like a tone and move around. But I was kind of surprised. I only played with somebody else for like 2 or 3 minutes, but I was kind of surprised at the, like, oh, are we going to go this way?
You develop like a Morse code sort of thing.
It's cool. And goddamn, that game is just like, that game is just shows you the power of art direction. It's so simple. Yeah. You're just running around in a desert, but you're just like captured. I mean, you're totally, mm-hmm. it has your rapt attention. Like,
anything else at the show stand out for you for that sort of similar creative spark, art direction?
Papo and Yo, more from an idea. It was described to me, so it's like, I mean, it was, I think it's the first game Nick Suttner has signed, like,
that's part of that pub fund.
Well done, Nick.
So it's developed.
And describe, what is Papo and Yo?
This is going to get weird.
Yeah. Go for it. So it's already weird.
Get weird. Yeah. So, I don't know this for certain because it was we'd had a couple of drinks, but this was how it was described to me. And that is that the one of the guys on the team growing up had a kind of a bad relationship with his father.
Well, kind of a good. Bad
relationship with his father, but his father was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And he wanted to represent that relationship with his father and the kind of the weird balance of when he was drunk and on drugs and versus not in a game environment, which was sort of a journey through life, right? So the father figure is represented by this giant monster that I think only the character can see.
It's like a pink rhino.
Big pink rhino monster. That, get it, is addicted to frogs.
Yeah.
And the more frogs it eats, the more the relationship between the monster and the player becomes abusive.
Wow.
So it's very helpful, right? In parts of the game.
Yeah. But so it's about the way you play it is you just sit in the corner and cry.
Yeah.
And you have to that's the circle button. And you end up having cry in the corner.
And by doing things in the game, I think you stop. You kind of divert him from eating the frogs. Wow. But then it's sort of a puzzle adventure. And then one of the puzzles they showed me was so the character walks up in the street and there's a bunch of cardboard boxes lying on the ground
filled with frogs.
And when you pick up the boxes, the buildings in the background move.
Oh, wow.
So you have to arrange the cardboard boxes on the ground, and it completely rearranges the city so that you can create a path through it.
That's awesome.
And there's lots of other sort of like spatial reasoning type puzzles.
And what did that have to do with the pink rhino and the frogs?
So if
we have to explain it to you, Garnet,
you just don't get it.
It's existential, man. He's escaping in his imagination.
So it's the representation of a journey, and the journey is accompanied by the monster that is the father figure, and as you're moving through the journey, you're also trying to distract the father from things that lead to an abuse. But
weird.
So does the rhino at one point like punch him in the face and throw him out the front door or something?
Probably, but so it's a PSN game, and just like like a lot of PSN titles, it's where they just like just fucking go nuts with it, you know?
Yeah,
and like great. It was so like everyone I think that spent any time with it, and Sony did nothing to really push it. I mean, like it was basically if you know Nick, he'd say you've got to check out this game, and I think if you didn't know someone that knew someone that saw it, you wouldn't have even known it was at the show.
It is interesting if you compare the digital distribution system on Live and the one on PSN, the sort of changing identity between the two, where it's really solidifying that Xbox Live Arcade games are very game-like games, you know, start to finish, exactly what you expect from a game, and you know what you're getting for your money, whereas PSN seems to be the home of these creative, you know, more artistic and creative endeavors, like a journey, like a, what's the name of this?
Papo and Yo. It's also one of those things where I guarantee, like, you'll walk out of here and you won't be able to remember it. I think Skip has something.
Limbo. Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet. That's cool. But I mean, those are fewer and further between.
Yeah.
And did anyone play Side Scroller?
Yeah,
that was really cool too. I really liked the
Junk.
Did you play Puddle, the Konami one?
What? No, I didn't play Puddle.
That's another kind of weird sort of puzzly.
What about as far as art direction? What about the new Rayman game?
Oh,
just amazing. Buttery wonderful.
I was showing it to people and they didn't believe it was gameplay.
What? Is it what?
Is it going to be like an Xbox Live game?
No, it's not an Xbox Live game. Luke, would you like back? Would you like to come back and like troll a little?
Skip hasn't had
a turn on yet.
All right. Well, we're gonna break in a minute. We can keep going on this group. All right. So Rayman.
What were we talking about? PSN being really creative and
Rayman. I'm excited to see a 2D platformer. I think that's cool. But
and apparently, it's insanely hard. Most of the levels are less than 2 minutes long, but you'll spend hours trying to get through them.
It's crazy, and it's got
you just ended my interest in the game.
Yeah, I mean, did you see like the guy that made the game was having trouble with it, like when he demoed it at the Ubisoft conference.
Well, they played it for like 20 minutes at the Ubisoft conference.
Yeah.
Like, the guy that was demoing it to us said that they threw a lot of the stuff together to get something to show at the show. I don't think it's been tweaked, but yeah, it is hard, and it's got that new Super Mario Brothers thing where you kind of F with your friends as you're helping them.
But you can stand, I mean, this is a really simple thing, but you can actually stand like over each other without pushing each other off levels, which is good.
But then you slap each other, and that's not good.
So is there any possibility to do a triple A title that has this sort of creative art design to it, or is, are we just totally stuck now in Call of Duty, Battlefield, ultra realism?
Shane back there, El Shaddai. It's just like triple A.
Shane's get triple A.
Didn't Prince of Persia try that?
Okami.
Well, I think it, Prince of Persia originally did, but you could see it like progressively moving towards.
No, the new, the non-subtitled one. Didn't they try that?
The non-subtitled
one. The one before last.
Oh, the cel-shaded one. Yeah. But, yeah. And it evidently didn't go over very well, did it? I mean, the darkness oozing around the world one. Yeah. I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah, well, there you go.
But is that a function of not wanting that sort of experience, or is it because the art direction just didn't pull it off on that game?
I liked that game, so.
It's a lot of dude bros.
But I think people are much more prepared to take risks on downloadable $10 titles than betting a $25 million budget on something that only, like, you know, 100,000 people might want.
Yeah, I saw so many Gears of War with a different skin on it at the show. It's crazy. Yes. And
Binary Domain was the
Binary
one.
That, Domain.
I kind of like
Space
Binary
Marine.
Domain.
I love the idea. I just don't think they've got the chops to pull it off.
I love that Space Marine, I know that Space Marine is Warhammer and that is an old thing, but I love that it's just called Space Marine. I mean, you just walk in through the hall
Marine.
And it's like, Space Marine. Yeah.
Actually, the one
they called
the
Military
other,
Shooter.
It's like Warhammer that I thought looked kind of fun was the Kill Team, which is just
a downloadable
twin
stick shooter that uses the stuff from space. It's like Renegade Ops.
Yeah.
Where it's, you know, it's a game engine zoomed out a long way and just leans into the shooting in like unabashedly.
Well, I think it's really difficult to do anything in this space right now that is not realistic, because now you start to see against a Battlefield 3 or against even a Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, like, you start to get that visual disparity and you're like, I don't know if I like this. Body Count. Did anyone see Body Count?
No.
That's the Codemasters game. And
it's by the dude that made Black.
Well, it was, who left.
Yeah.
And left the team there in Guildford to, like, finish it. And you know, they talk about, well, we're making an arcade shooter, so we're going to be colorful and fanciful. And then you're looking at it, you're like, well, it's not really working for me. And I remember Time Splitters being like the last one, and that's also sort of out of that same area. Yeah. Probably have some same guys working on those games. Mm-hmm. And Time Splitters hit there for a while, like around Time Splitters 2, like they were in their groove and they were doing pretty well, but it too wore thin. I just think it's that no one's sort of...
I just got sick of first-person shooters. And it was...
God.
I had some people with me at the show where it was their first time, you know, like new people that had joined the company and they were sat next to me and, like, they would lean over and be like...
It's another
does
one.
Does every game look like this? Yeah. You know, like, especially at the Sony press conference. There was a lot of, like...
Yes.
You know, when they rolled out Dust, whatever it's called, and it's like...
Yeah.
Oh, and it's like, it's going to work with the EVE Online universe. Well, that's kind of interesting. And then it cuts to gameplay, and it's like, a fucking first-person shooter.
Exact
great.
Same reaction.
Yes. I think everybody did. It's like Killzone again. I mean, like... Yeah, another Space Marine generic.
Aliens
looking.
Colonial Marine. They were making a big deal about that, and you walk in, it's like, yeah.
So as much as we push them, are shooters ready for fatigue syndrome? Are they going to fall by the wayside?
I think we're seeing, I mean, like the sort of hardcore, like, consume every piece of media during E3, like, community were kind of done with Modern Warfare, like, this year. I mean, there was some
the audience isn't, though.
There.
No, I mean, like, more tweets about that damn thing. And it's like, well, I don't really want to cover it, but okay.
I mean, there's going to be the haves and have-nots, like the big, huge, the Battlefields and the Modern Warfares are going to succeed just on their own inertia. But, I mean, all of these other Me Toos and wannabes and stuff like that are not going to hit.
But if,
people are going to take baths.
If the audience for that kind of market is, say, 20-something million people and Black Ops did 17 of that this year, I mean, I got to think for EA... One of their metrics of success is, like, how much less Modern Warfare 3 sells than Black Ops, as much as it is how much Battlefield does, because all they can do is really cut into Activision's market, because there can't be that many people left to reach with a shooter.
So do you think... So you're saying you think Modern Warfare 3 will sell less than Black Ops?
If only... If Battlefield 3 is as big of a success...
Oh, I
as
see
it
you're
looks,
saying...
Then one of the metrics of Battlefield success will not just be how many millions it sells, but how many fewer Modern Warfare does than Black Ops. Which is exactly the same thing with the Old Republic. I got to think one of EA's metrics for that has got to be, okay, well, we want, you know, 500,000 a month paying to break even or whatever it is. But I've got to think that one of the things that they're being pushed on is we want to see monthly subscribers on World of Warcraft coming down.
I played it at the show, and it is WoW with a Star Wars skin.
Yeah.
I mean, it really
It's really morphed into that.
It's completely the same game, down to how the classes behave. And that, there's even that, spells that are kind of equivalent.
And does that make you interested? Because that sort of turns me off.
Oh, it's a huge turn off. The things that differentiate it are the things they didn't show very much of at the show, which is space battling.
Yes.
And the companion stuff to a certain extent. But for the most part, everything they showed, and it was playable, we played it for a while, it is wow.
It's wow. It's and the wow. funny thing is that so when you're playing it and you're like, wow, this is World of Warcraft, down to like entirely the way the quest system works, the way all the yep. skills work, the way you create for your character, and then the message that they're giving you is, well, you know, fans have asked us why we haven't done KOTOR 3, and we wanted to let you know that this is KOTOR 3 and 4
5, 6,
and
5 7.
Because this is going to be a great single player experience, and if you want to, you can just play it like it's a single player role playing game like KOTOR and enjoy it like that and never even know that you're in an MMO.
What they keep telling you is, well, people are going to want to play every single class because all of the decisions are so different, and then what they showed as an example of what makes a decision special is completely superficial and doesn't impact gameplay at all. They showed you can either kill this guy or not kill him, and we're going to fast forward into the game and see what happens if you kill him or don't kill him. If you kill him, well, he's dead and you never see him again. But if you don't kill him, he says, hey, thanks for not killing me. I mean, there's no impact on, you bump into him again, he's like, yeah, I've been walking around the world and doing right. good deeds, thanks for not killing me.
Yeah.
It's there's no
you
actual...
impacted one guy's
all right you yeah. know what so I'm gonna Luke said in the background, he said that's choice in BioWare games, play Witcher 2, and
I have
me,
been I love
so,
it
so then let me tell you what was awesome. So first of all, they showed Witcher 2 on 360, which by the way looked really really good. Like obviously they've already put a lot of work into it,
and
they did a really and so their target, by the way, their target, he said something about medium, their target for that is to achieve PC medium setting details on the 360, which if you've seen Witcher 2 in yeah. medium
look, ultra go home.
Well, so then they did a great thing because they knew that they had a lot of folks in the demo that were not going to be familiar with The Witcher. They showed a stretch of a section of the game with two people playing it doing two different things. And the divergence in the way this scene played out was shocking. First off, it started where he had to explain, well, here's all the choices we made coming up to this scene, because that's what set up the way this thing is, so that you can see what happens now when we do even more different things. And basically it came down to the Witcher was escaping from a prison cell, and who he encountered on the way out depended on who he had helped out earlier and who was alive and who wasn't. And the entire scene ended with him leaving that area in two entirely different ways with two entirely different people to go do two entirely different things based off of what had happened and how it transpired through the dungeon.
Well, at the end
now
of
that's choice.
At the end of the first chapter of that game, you decide.
Luke made a mess in the back.
Are they leaving in the witch sex?
They're leaving. Oh, they say they're leaving in. Yeah, they're going to leave in the sex. They're going to leave in all that. They're
wow.
A matter of fact, one of the things that was really interesting also was they did everything but say Oblivion in saying that they were going to make the most amazing, beautiful, fantastic, choice filled role playing game ever on a console.
Well, at the end of the first chapter of that game, you align with one of two people. And I can only imagine that the entire game is different based on that one choice. It's an awesome game.
Luke just came again.
Yeah,
but all I right, thought Skyrim so, looked good. I'll just say that.
All right, so we're gonna align with some different people. We're gonna take a little break. We'll align with some other people. See what transpires in the second half of this special Shag News Weekend Confirmed from E3 2011. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the GameFly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games, GameFly app.
You should call it the Game Flap.
Open your Game Flap.
And as always, the app is free.
Jeff Cannata, master marketer. Get your hands on a Game Flap.
The must-have app for gamers.
Open your Game Flap.
Yeah, you want to put a game in your app.
Game Flap, master marketer.
Open your Game Flap.
And stick a game in it.
Put in your Game Flap.
And stick a game in it. Game in it.
That's gotta catch on.
Open up your Game Flap.
Stop it.
The Game Flap.
Stop it.
The Game Flap.
No, Flap is not good.
The Game Flap.
No, Flap is not good. Would you eat a Flap meat salad?
You're not asking people to eat your app, dude. You're eating your app.
The Game Flap. I wanted the Game Flap.
Max.
Game Flap.
Max.
Game Flap.
Max.
Confirmed is brought to you by the GameFly app. GameFly app. You guys were looking a little confused there. That's the Del Rio remix thing that we have every week. You listen to the show, right? Ha! Ha! Yeah, you're like, I'm not on that show. Fuck that noise.
What did I tell you back in the day? I listen to shit I'm on. Come on.
I know. Well, you're on this one.
And I love Ira Glass, so I listen to that.
Oh, that's not bad. I can get with that. Hey, Mr. Andrew Pfister has joined us here at the table now.
Good morning.
And he's
good morning.
Rocking a very
very
classic Brewers shirt,
bottle and glove.
Nice.
Is that from the Paul Molitor era?
Yes, that's right. The Igniter.
The Igniter. That was his nickname.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good nickname.
He's a leadoff hitter.
All right, so
half the audience just went, "What?"
We were talking during the break about BioShock Infinite because that seemed to have caught a number of folks' eyes, namely Mr. John Davison.
I think we should start with Luke on that one, actually.
Oh, I was going to give
I was very impressed.
I was going to give it a running start before we threw Sean Elliott under the bus.
We're not throwing Sean Elliott under any buses. I thought the demo was incredible.
It's amazing. Like,
Sean Elliott is driving the bus.
The experience of sitting in the demo, watching them go through everything was amazing. And I think I said something about it being God tier. It was one of the
Absolutely.
Best demos I've ever sat through.
Yeah. And it's live. I mean, it's live gameplay.
It's
he
live
is
gameplay
playing the game.
And,
yep.
And I mean, they've stepped. I mean, we talked about weird stuff earlier on, but I mean, they've stepped up the weird. I mean, we were talking in the break. I think that Ken Levine is definitely sort of drifting into Terry Gilliam territory
in a
really good way. But I mean, like the thing they got off, because I'd not seen much of it for a while, and when the little girl reaches her hands into the dead horse's head and pulls open the dimension, and suddenly you're in a 1980s street scene.
Alternate 1983?
Yeah.
With Tears for Fears.
With Tears for Fears playing in Revenge of the Jedi playing in a movie theater, and then she closes it back up and you're back on the floating city in the sky and there's a dead... I mean, that was just like... What the fuck just happened?
It's like, hey, look what we're doing.
I just wish Jeff was still sitting here. Over the break, he was talking about how she's into being asphyxiated. You know, puts her hand around her neck, kind of gives you that, like, come hither. Like, all right.
So, I don't really know how to follow that up.
How do you follow up a good joke about choking?
Just so people know what we're talking about, because they may not see that video. So, you have to rescue this girl who's been imprisoned for 15 years in a tower or whatever.
So, that's
right?
the story of the game is that there's the floating city, and the city has become like this utopia, but of course, as all utopias seem to have happened
to them,
it's fallen apart.
But it's a utopia that's sort of dumping on the world beneath it as well, right? There's some sort of like, it's like an almost separate civilization.
And it's driven off of that American populism movement of the early 20th century. But it's already divided in what you come into is you come into an ongoing civil war between, you know, like the growing proletariat sort of side and the people that are seen as like the bourgeois elite. And you're kind of cast in the middle of this. You've been sent from Earth to go from Earth. That's weird. But that is kind of how it is. You've been sent from the surface to go bring back this woman, Elizabeth, who is taken as a child and has been imprisoned in this tower there. And she has some sort of powers. She can control these rifts. You brought the rifts.
Yeah.
And the rifts are a big part of the game. And there are evidently everyone on this in the city can see the rifts, but she's the only one who can manipulate their power.
Yeah. And she's being chased by a giant bird.
Ah, yes, the
mechanical
keeper.
Bird,
giant mechanical bird,
giant mechanical bird. So
that she may or may not have a
relationship with.
Yeah, relationship with.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're playing as Booker DeWitt. I have my notes now.
The choking reference is that there's a scene at the beginning of the demo that we saw where she's saying, you know, if I get don't let me get captured, and your character is like, I'm not going to let that happen. And then she grabs your hand and wraps it around.
Yeah,
her
she's
throat.
Like, no, you don't understand. You know, yeah. Like if this
like
happens, you will kill
laid.
Me.
Well, so and to that end, that's obviously intentional because Ken did describe the songbird, which is that keeper, as a sort of jealous, possessive ex-husband type role.
I said they fucked. I called it.
Mechanical bird bone.
There's probably a website for that. I'm sure.
There will be now.
Maybe Glory Hulk Productions.
Jesus Christ. This is what happens when you get to the second half of a show like this. Okay, so, but great combat.
Yeah.
The rifts add a tactical element to it. And then you've got the skylines where you're zipping through the sky all the
where
time.
Where it becomes an on-rail shooter, literally.
Right, but you're not on rail. On a rail, but you're not on rails.
Right.
So you can get wherever you want to through that.
That was the sort of like the part of the demo where I'm like, okay, when I play it, it's not going to be this smooth.
It's not
going to
look good. I'm like, well, how do you know where you're going?
Right, it's going to suck. I'm going to miss jumping off onto the airship so many times.
That was something I thought about like during E3, seeing all these demos and like the way they make everything look so cool is because they rehearse it and they practice it. They're acting within their game and
Well, and in that case, there's probably some amount of scripting that determines. Like, you remember the part where he goes into sort of a cathedral, and as he steps into the cathedral and turns and looks, rockets hit and explode behind him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, all that stuff. Like, the, like my question about the demo is, what is the game? Like, right. Like, if you think back to Bioshock 1, the game of Bioshock was go to area, receive fetch quest, execute fetch quest.
Clear out splicers.
Yep. Yep. Kill your way to fetch quest. Get story bits along the way, mm-hmm. fight guy, go to new area, do new fetch quest. I hope it's something different than that.
I think that you'll still see a lot of it's a shooter and interjecting yourself. I think one of the things that Ken seems really hot for in this one is interjecting yourself into this civil war and deciding how much you actually give a damn to get involved and how much you just want to keep on the path and get Elizabeth off the city. Like, the more you see... Yes?
No, nothing. No,
nothing.
What?
Just selective editing in my head. Keep on the path and get Elizabeth off. Ship it. Me and the bird.
But there's also a bit of a, because you as the big brother thing going on as well. Because like now,
I don't know that it's big brother. Because
no, but no, I think you as
daddy?
A character are the new embodiment of that kind of, I mean, the bird is the big brother character of this game. But the mechanic is that you have the girl with you in this game. And it's like, yes. It's taking an idea that we all responded to really well in Bioshock 1. And they've kind of turned it on its head, and now there's a bit of a sort of eco kind of dependency thing going
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. Like, he wants them to be seen as helping each other, that they, you know, there will be times we have to make real sacrifices.
And
for
she
instance, she's willing to go
she's
back.
She's a special weapon that you don't have 100% control over. You can kind of suggest to her that maybe she might want to go do something, but she's not going to.
Well, you can tell her which
like
rifts.
Most relationships.
You can tell her
you
which
lead
rifts
a horse
you want
to water.
Wow.
But you can't make her blow you.
So he definitely, I think, wants to go for this like idea of there's this, you know, he calls them, you know, the bad guy, not bad guys, one of the factions of the Vox Populi who are trying to make a better society. But like, because the whole world up there in Colombia is already morally compromised, anytime you're looking at a situation, it's not like you can really fix things. It's not like you can actually make good happen here, even though it's not like Bioshock where it already went to shit and you're seeing the refuse. It's like it's going to shit. And guess what? You still really you can't fix it no matter how good you want to be.
Right.
It's like your decisions only affect, you know, you internally.
Yeah. So it's like, OK, you know, you make your moral decision. Are you good with that? Because if you're good with just like cruising past here and letting these guys kill each other and go to shit and getting Elizabeth off of Colombia like you're supposed to. Great. Go for it. You're always good with getting Elizabeth off. Hey, you know what? She's been with Songbird a long time. All right.
I'm pretty bored.
All right. So then, what was your point then about demos versus...
So you have the Bioshock demo, which is an amazing experience.
Right.
And very well tailored. You're designed to sit there for, you know, 17 minutes, have an incredible experience, leave, oh my God. And that's exactly what it does.
Absolutely.
On the other, but the questions linger like, okay, so what is the game? Like, what is the game going to be? Because the game's not going to be, like you were saying, I'm not going to be looking good while I'm playing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be getting blown up. I'm going to be missing rail jump, be falling to my death, all that.
Well, actually, you won't be missing rail jumps because they have that, like, pretty much click-lock move. And you won't be falling to your death because they found that wasn't fun.
But you can fall off the entire game, basically, in this, right? You can't?
No, they kind of, like, nixed that because they're like, you know what? It's not fun, and if you're up in the air, like, flying through all these air spaces, and there's always that constant threat of, well, if I miss, I'm just going to fall to my death, and that's going to suck, mm-hmm. then it sort of inhibits you to have as much fun with it as you could.
Right.
So, and it's not that they stop you, it's that the rail density of the skyline is high enough that anytime you come flying off, you'll be able to click lock onto the next one below you or onto a surface pad.
And it'll take you to what is basically a respawn point.
Sort of. Yeah. Yeah. Mechanically.
Yeah. Mechanically,
because now you've been doing
respawn. Yet. You're going to respawn with flare coming off of a sweet rail.
Exactly. But that's better than
falling. Like the old Sly Cooper mechanic where it would sort of suck you down onto like onto a balance spot.
Or, yes, in yeah. a way. In okay. a way it is. I saw the new Sly, by the way.
Looks like the old Sly, but I'm good with that.
So on one hand, we have Bioshock. And then on the other hand, this other demo that I saw, which was completely different, was the Batman demo. Now, yes. During Bioshock, no one talked. The game spoke. During the Batman demo, a dude talked the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And all they showed us in the Batman demo was the game. It was, here's Batman. Here, I'm going to actually talk over all the audio and show you all the combat and show you exactly like a hub and spoke model where the city of Gotham's the hub. Here, let's spoke into a mission. Let's switch to Catwoman. They were very mechanical about showing the game part of it. So I feel like I have a really good understanding of what Batman's game is going to be, where I don't have much of an understanding yet about what the game part of Bioshock's
right.
going to be.
Yeah.
And are you happy or upset? I mean, did you have an opinion about that?
No, it's just two different. It's like two very different approaches to doing behind closed doors
and
demos.
I think it's affecting the way that the games have been covered and what the audience is seeing of those games. I think because we're getting a lot more sort of descriptive stuff about Batman. I mean, no, Batman is definitely a contender for Game of the Show, I've got to think. I mean, it's...
I don't know that it...
Oh, dude.
I was going to say, I don't know that it really changed... Batman is definitely a contender for Game of the Show. Yeah. Absolutely. That's not a question. I think that it doesn't... I think you guys are maybe reading a little bit too much into it. Batman is a open... is obviously going for the, like, open world, exploratory, play around in the city, do what you want to do. And that's not what Bioshock Infinite is. Bioshock Infinite is going for a not quite linear, but...
No, but what,
what he's touching on is an order shooter.
For, you know, millions of people this week, the way that these games are being shown to us collectively is affecting how they hear about them. And I think it's interesting to see the very
But I have no lack of information on Bioshock. Like, I have tons of philosophical information. Like, I have... Did you glean that
from the trailer or in the demo, or did you get that mostly from talking to Ken?
Mostly from talking to Ken.
Well, how does the game play, then?
How does the game Bioshock play?
Bioshock Infinite, does it play just like Bioshock?
Yeah, Bioshock Infinite plays like a shooter where you have Elizabeth who comes along with you as a tactical option. She can open rifts. She has, like, a juice meter of how much she can open.
To what Luke was saying, what are you doing?
You're rescuing Elizabeth.
Right,
It's exactly like Bioshock. In Bioshock, you went down to Rapture, and you had this path through Rapture, and at the end of Rapture, you had this giant end boss battle. It's going to be exactly the same. I mean, come on, it's going to be the same structure.
For one reason or another, you're compelled to move from area to area.
Yeah, you're going to go to Columbia, you're going to try and go get Elizabeth, and then you're going to try and get her off of Columbia, and the way it's going to be like, oh, well, how are we going to get off Columbia? Well, there's going to be like some sort of airship or something, obviously, because you're in the sky, and you're going to have to journey to get there, and along the way, there's going to be things that happen, and then you'll have a big, you know, climactic fight at the end of it, and there'll be the end of the game.
Spoilers.
Yeah, like, that's spoilers. Oh, my God. I mean, does that really defy explanation so much?
Remember, we had a conversation a long time ago about experiences and mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what I'm talking about are, I would like to know what the mechanics are that are going to drive me around the world. Like, what you just outlined, the actual entire plot of the game, and spoiled for everyone, is really experiential. I actually want to know what's going to drive me around. Because if you say the same thing about Rapture in Bioshock 1, like, you're going to go underground, there's going to be a bunch of stuff you're going to learn, there's going to be mysteries you're going to uncover, and you're going to eventually find out who the guy is who fucked up Rapture to begin
with,
and you're going to have a huge fight with him. And like, yeah, that sounds good. And if I said, like, but what you're going to do, you're going to take some pictures, you're going to turn on some air for some plants, you're going to take a couple pictures of some dead things, you're going to fetch some stuff, and you're going to want to pick some stuff up, but you can't until you talk to your dad. Then you're going to turn the game off. like when you get into the nitty-gritty of it, like, I want to know the nitty-gritty. Like, I want to actually know, like, what the mechanics are going to be. And, like, if it's going to be more than... I'm sure it's going to be more than Fetch Quest. It's going to be something different. It's going to be.
I see your fingers crossed.
They're all splayed out. It'll be more.
All right, so then back to Batman. What got you so excited about Batman?
Just combat, best in breed.
Yeah.
Like, best in breed ass kicking. Just amazing. Just looks super satisfying. First one, super satisfying combat. This one, just beat the shit out of stuff.
That's all you want to do. You just want to hop in the middle of melee the crap out.
Yeah, I want to put on some pleather and beat some ass.
What's different from the last game?
Catwoman.
So what do you think about the addition of Catwoman as a special guest? Are you into the idea of
originally, I wasn't sure, but when they brought her out and played her and she had like her own sort of suite of moves that were still in line with what Batman's doing, it looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew, what did you check out while you were at E3 that stands out in this class of superheroes? John checked out a superhero game he wasn't too thrilled about.
I'm going to think for a while, John. Talk.
Ahead of the show, we got to see X-Men Destiny, which, you know, probably not the best thing Activision has in their arsenal right now, which might explain why they downplayed it.
Suffice it to say, it's difficult to make a good superhero game, so is it that it's falling victim to?
No, I mean, Rocksteady have clearly, like, nailed it, and, I mean, Activision themselves have done pretty good with previous X-Men games.
Mm-hmm.
I just think this is...
Not the right one.
Not the right one.
So, no knights to lift it to a shining victory?
What are you doing there?
Nothing. I'm just waiting for you to like talk about some of the stuff you were talking about.
I think it's very weak, and I don't think Activision are going to be like really pushing it very aggressively, which is why I think a lot of their booth is all about, we have a game called Call of Duty. It's going to be awesome. We got some other thing going on.
I heard a couple of people say they liked Captain America. Yeah. For what it was, they're like, "Oh, Captain America is actually pretty decent."
What is it? What was it?
Who said it was okay?
Isn't it just
it's by Next Level Games. They're talented. They're doing Mario Kart.
Shane knows all about it. It's from Next Level Games, and
they stole from Batman.
Stealing from Batman is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew, you've had a moment now. What did you like at E3 2011?
What did I like at E3 2011?
Yes. What's your pick? You must have liked something.
I saw so many games, and I'm trying to cycle through them.
They all looked so similar.
They all looked very, very similar.
Andrew, you were saying you really were surprised by SSX.
I was surprised by SSX
in a
not good way. What?
What?
I thought they fixed it.
It just seemed very rough. They fixed the art.
Well, it's a ways off. It's pre-alpha.
January 2012 is the release, and they're going to do another Gamescom push for it. But SSX was...
Oh, I didn't realize that's actually not... They shouldn't be in pre-alpha if it's January 2012.
They've got time to fix it, though.
Yeah, they do. And it didn't seem very showable to me at this point. And they let us play it after they showed it.
I'm in love with the idea of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's SSX 3 in HD pretty much.
Dubrow's gone, right?
Yeah.
Dubrow's totally gone.
They didn't. They showed a little bit of the Survive It stuff, which is what that first batch of marketing was emphasizing.
Yeah.
And it was significantly less Dubrow, like Call of Duty, Tom Clancy's snowboarding. They show like a very exciting avalanche evasion, like from a reverse angle coming down the mountain. So you're not like behind them.
Which they're evidently able to take real telemetry from their skills. Yeah. They've done their mountain man tool.
They scan, NASA technology. They scan all the mountains. And then they go in with their tools and tweak it to make it like SSX stuff. It just seems
really cool.
It seemed rough. And have you seen the video of the Tricket stuff when you're landing the trick? And as soon as you land, there's like a significant pause while the terrain deforms right in front of you. So it's like the what's his name? Sean White skateboarding game where it's like based on how awesome your trick is, it changes the terrain.
Well, the environment
in front of you.
Changes, yeah.
And it's just not a very good effect. And it pauses it. The whole satisfaction of SSX, like landing an Uber, is
streaming,
just going right into it. And
I think that's a bad decision.
So, also, I mean, along another EA game that I thought was just like a big kind of step backwards was The Run.
I wanted to check that out.
Well, I mean, I'm curious, John. Do you think Need for Speed needs two annual entries?
No.
I think they already fucked up the Need for Speed by like, okay, we did Hot Pursuit, which was a great game, and before it's reached its shelf life, they're already like pushing on Shift 2, and they've like abandoned that.
So is it the on foot stuff that throws you?
Yeah, or? And it's only a small amount of stuff, but it's like it's the effect of Mirror's Edge, but it's all quick time. You don't control it. Because when I first saw it, I'm like, oh wow, they took because DICE did that. Something to do. Yeah. DICE are involved in everything EA's doing right now.
Well, The Run is running on the Frostbite engine.
Yeah. So,
which does work great, which by the way, does work great. The physics are some of the best physics I've felt in a Need for Speed game. The driving feels really good.
Right.
And it is drop dead gorgeous.
But it's, in a lot of ways, it's a big step back. It's Need for Speed undercover. It's like, why somebody at Black Box thinks that we want some kind of bullshit cops and robbers.
Jason Statham transporter
story in Need for Speed.
I can't remember who I heard it from, but apparently it's not that much of that in the game.
Yeah, it's like 10-15% of the game.
I see it more as like a narrative conceit to get from leg to leg, because you're not going to be racing across like I-40 in Iowa.
Right. Actually, you are going to be.
Are you?
Yeah, like part of their thing is that you're not just racing in the city. You're racing, I think they said like to do the game, they have like 500 kilometers of track miles. It's way more than they put into any other game, any of their prior Need for Speed games.
And they need to be able to explain somehow why you're getting out of one car and into another or why. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. By the way, I don't think you need people in Need for Speed.
I don't think you need people. I think it's totally ridiculous, this whole like trying to turn it into a chase movie thing, because the car racing game part of it, I was trying to remember that I could just cut that other part away, but I can't just completely cut it away.
They were doing some really interesting things with the camera where, I think because it's Black Box, I mean, those guys, they've been experimenting with this stuff before, but do you see the camera tilt?
Oh, yeah, it was really cool.
It was this time?
I really like it. It was like really visceral.
There's times
where
when
really
you hit a corner hard enough, the camera almost tips up on its side, and it's like watching like an action movie.
Well, yeah, I think EA probably thought, why not try to make it a little bit like Driver so we can try to encroach on another market?
Because it's not good. Yeah. It's really stupid when you're like driving the car and you're having a great time, and then it stops and you jump out and now you have to do all these quick time events. And like, I get that it's funny to listen to them talk about the progression of it. They're like, well, we wanted to do this, you know, we wanted to do the story. We wanted to have the chase, you know, chase movie mentality. And we tried it where we just had these intermissions where you were watching the video, but that wasn't interactive. So we thought we needed QuickTime. No, you don't actually. Well, either your story is good enough for me to pay attention or it's not. Adding me pressing triangle doesn't matter. And then they go into, well, you know, we weren't completely satisfied with that. So we added branching QTE. So if you miss your punch, you might get grabbed, but then you got another chance to do it because we didn't want you just failing the QTE and starting over. How about you just take it out?
Okay, there was a game that added QTEs that I was actually happy kind of how they did it. Ninja Gaiden 3, did anybody else?
No, I saw it for about 5 minutes, and I saw some of the QTE stuff, taking down the robot legs.
Right, because I was really disappointed with Ninja Gaiden 2, but I think Ninja Gaiden 3 seems to be a step back in the right direction, even without Itagaki.
You are the first person I've heard that liked it.
I've heard negative things.
Everybody else was really negative on it.
The graphics, I mean, the level looked like something from Ninja Gaiden 2 exactly. I was like, is this even a new environment? But the combat is definitely better than 2, and the QuickTime events,
are you sure? Because that's so funny, because really? Everybody came to me and they're like, yeah, the new Ninja Gaiden doesn't have the depth in combat. It's XXXXX.
It's maybe a little more mashy, and when you do the QTEs, it kind of erupts into this fury of super uber violence, and like, the moves that Ryu's doing are so incredibly violent and gory and bloody that it's
oh, they're definitely
really
the
over
thing.
The top. But I don't know. For me, it felt like a step back in the right direction after 2.
Yes, so. Mr. Mark McDonald. Yeah, Mark McDonald. The mic is ready.
I snuck
to, like,
on the
something.
Mic. Luke absconded.
Somebody talked about a Japanese game and suddenly like, just appeared.
John's like,
but, you know, I think Koei Tecmo has been maybe a little bit on the wane a little bit, and I think this is they're coming back. Seems to me.
Okay,
a little bit.
Yeah, I mean that's actually. Yeah,
I want to talk about Final Fantasy.
Nobody is talking.
Well, so
about Final
I will
Fantasy
talk because on this podcast, the last time I was on this podcast, I'd been playing a lot of Final Fantasy 13.
Yes, and you finished it.
No, I got to the last boss and I couldn't beat him because I have to go level for like 10 more hours.
How did you wait? Were you enjoying the game? Did you just decide that you were going to beat that game, or were you playing it you were actually enjoying it?
I enjoyed aspects of it. It has a great soundtrack and the battle system.
The battle system has a great soundtrack. She has a great personality.
But it might actually be lower than that.
Ultimately, I think. All told, it is more disappointing to me than even Final Fantasy XII, which was previously my most disappointing Final Fantasy. Outside of 11, 13, which 13, 13
I'm not
going to 11,
which I'm not
going
to reopen the wounds and the argument of 12.
I won't either. Go.
It has a lot of problems, but I'm still prepared to give this sequel a chance because I really liked Final Fantasy X 2, and it repurposed 80% of the content from 10, was kind of just a way to
added some costumes, added some dance concerts.
Right. I think we all kind of know that 13-2 is like,
sweet. And I loved it.
I did too. It had great battle system. But 13-2 is kind of a way to recoup the investment of 13, clearly, by repurposing a lot of the assets. But they're going wacky with it. I mean, you might have noticed there's like rap music in the battles, and you like warp to 2 different times, and it's kind of like Pokemon. You raise monsters.
It didn't. I was a little surprised that I mean, it was more open. Of course, it wasn't hallway, and I think it's smart that they showed kind of a. It wasn't a town exactly environment, but there were people around that you could talk to and stuff like that. That was a problem a lot of people had with 13. But, you know, obviously the game's not done, but as a adjunct to 13, I kind of expect it to look at least as good as 13, even at...
You didn't think it looked as same? The environment they were showing was a new environment, but you are revisiting Pulse and Cocoon in 2 different times. So clearly you're going to be going to a lot of the same places you went to in 13.
I was just struck by, like, the apathy. Nobody talked about 13-2 to me unless I asked them about it. Nobody was talking
about
it.
All right, so if you liked the combat system, how did you like the addition of this beginning of the battle initiative system where like the ring explodes? When you spot an enemy, there's like a expanding circular ring, and once you step with, you have to get within it and then click a button to like initiate combat, and if you're successful at doing that within the timer, then you get an initiative advantage. Right. Do you like that idea?
The jury's still out. And I definitely don't like reducing my active human party members to 2. I mean, Final Fantasy IV had 5 people, now you're at 2. So it's kind of an issue. But I'm still looking forward to it and wanting to learn more. And
well, battle system was supposed to be one of the one highlights of 13.
Yeah, 13's was good, but it was a really slow ramp up. I just hope this one kind of opens up and goes and doesn't hold your hand for 40 hours.
Yeah, you don't get the real cool part of the battle system in 13 until how long into it?
I mean, about 12, 13 hours.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. So that was one. Another one that really, you know, I was excited to see was Dragon's Dogma in Capcom's booth, which is kind of like
really
well. So it's a Japanese developed game that's trying very hard to appeal to the Western white RPG audience. And in fact, my friend Rob Fox, who was here earlier, we've been growing up playing games. He loves Capcom. He thought it was made by white people. He really did. He's like, oh, that game's made in America. Like, no, totally made in Japan.
Right. I wouldn't say it's totally. It's definitely like Oblivion flavored, but you can tell. I at least could still tell.
Yeah, because you can run and jump, and
Devil May Cry. Isn't it targeted much more at like a competitor for Dark Souls?
No, I mean it's really kind of like Devil May Cry meets Monster Hunter, but you have three AI companions.
Yeah, right.
And there's QTEs, and the boss battle is kind of like Shadow of the Colossus. I mean, it's piecemeal, but it's grabbing things from all over and putting it together pretty well.
I mean, it's basically saying like the combat. They love these open world games. The Capcom guys are saying we love these open world games, but the combat is kind of lacking in terms of like the visceral kind of action, and they want to meld the two. I see it as really Western influence, but they still want that, need that game to sell, want and need that game to sell in Japan as well. So it's kind of like this interesting hybrid.
So is there online play?
I can't really talk
about that. Did they announce whether or not there's online play at E3?
No, I don't think they said anything. They said there's going to be some kind of multiplayer component to it. But
I mean, but the fact that you're in a party with three other AI characters and giving them commands, if there isn't four player... You can't give them commands? They just go on their own?
Yeah, they do their own thing.
Oh, okay.
They fight with you.
I mean, I'd be surprised if there's no online, personally. I'd be disappointed. But
so what else did you play Operation Raccoon City?
I watched it play, didn't play it. Looks a lot like Zogom, but in Resident Evil.
But it's fun. Like as a fan of that era, I was totally skeptical of that game. I was completely skeptical of that game. And maybe it's because I really like that era. I mean, I'm super into the Umbrella side of the story of Resident Evil. Like
you're still reading like notes.
I still really like it. But I don't think maybe it's like I think it's twofold. I think it's A, that I like that sort of fiction, but I think it's also B, that I have really great nostalgic memories of playing those games, even going back like when Resident Evil and GameCube came back out.
So do we, but like the opening cinema where they kill Leon, it's like, what?
Yeah, I know. That was disappointing. But playing as an Umbrella operative in the thick of thick of Raccoon City,
it sounds great.
2 and 3.
On paper, for sure, it sounds great. I'm
sitting there in a mission where I'm like with the Umbrella control team trying to take out Lickers. But that's cool.
No, Mark kind of said it looked like a PC game, and it does look like a PC game.
Oh, it definitely looks like a PC game.
But so is that a bad thing?
No, I don't think it's a bad thing.
So yeah, so it controls well.
It plays well. The co-op worked very well, and all they did there's nothing about their demo that gave away much about how it's going to fit in story wise. It was very much it's a multiplayer combat shooter. Play it, see if you like it. It was fun. It looked surprisingly good on screen. I thought it looked much better. I thought it looked much better playing it on a screen than it had in screenshots. It's not that bad.
Okay, another game at Capcom's booth. It wasn't playable, but they had finally a real gameplay trailer of DMC.
I missed this. I didn't see this.
Ninja
I was
Theory.
Curious.
Okay,
why the hell wasn't it even at the show?
It's probably for Gamescom, but since it's very controversial because it's the guys who made my favorite game, Heavenly Sword.
Yes, yes.
And they kind of gave this emo, weird redesign to Dante that everybody hated, including myself. And in the gameplay demo trailer, it looks pretty fucking good. And
is he picking up cars and stuff, or what's going on?
He's in like a city that looks kind of like the city from DMC2, but way better. And he's fighting people, but then he goes into church and like things are going nuts, and pews are flying up in the air. And it's just combat. It really is just pure combat. But when Dante gets like overdrive mode, his hair turns white and he looks back like Wreck-It Dante again. I was like, yes.
I wonder if they had that planned.
That's kind of. Yeah, I was about to say. I bet that was like a response. Bring back iconic Dante.
I'm pretty sure that is them capitulating to all these slings and arrows from the fans. So
good.
Well, they changed Infamous 2 dude back to regular Infamous 2. Everybody complained about him. So
not unwisely either. I think it was a pretty good decision.
So listen to the haters. Well, okay. A funny thing about Dragon's Dogma is the director of our game El Shaddai Ascension of the Metatron coming out July 26th.
That's a very creative game, by
Smooth.
The way.
Very daring and creative. Daring. What's interesting is that director would have been the art director for Dragon's Dogma had he stayed at Capcom. He was
really?
How different the game might have looked had he tried to make it look the way he likes things to look.
So then just to clarify something I said earlier so that Shane was very upset when I talked about creative design. I did not articulate myself well.
Clearly not.
Oh, God. Come on.
What I was trying to get at was how similar
all of the first-person shooters
All games trying to achieve photorealism are going to look kind of similar these days, yes. Don't you think?
I mean, I wasn't trying to implicate that there aren't other games out there trying to be creative in their art design. But in the shooter space, it's very much become a it's a weapons race. My Battlefield 3 looks better than your Modern Warfare 3.
We haven't
3
really seen a first-person shooter with a unique art style in years.
Yeah.
I mean, what was this?
What about XCOM?
It looks a lot better than it looked last year, actually.
Yeah, XCOM does look a lot better. Who else saw the demo?
I walked out of that impressed. And I'm not an old school XCOM fan. I have no emotional attachment to it, which is why I think I'm on that side of the fence. Mm-hmm. I've run into a couple people during the show, and I mentioned I saw XCOM, it's really cool, and they just give me a look.
Well, because it's not old XCOM.
But they're not going to do a tactical combat game. So I loved old XCOM. Obviously I played that and loved it and had a great time with it. And that's, I think, you either can accept that they're going to do a different game or they can't. Now, if they're going to do a different game, I think that where they were last year with, we're going to take a shooter like Bioshock and glaze on a layer of alien killing and we're going to call it XCOM, that was not cool.
The trailer from last year was horrible, but this year, I'm glad they pushed it back. Given all the time it needs.
So. I mean, basically, the combat is Mass Effect. The combat is Mass Effect. You've got these two guys. And even down to when you use your extra allies, there's two half circle brackets on the screen that pull up to select their powers. I'm like, I've seen this system before, but that's cool. And then all of the RPG stuff of building up your agent list back at the home office. Do I take this alien tech I just got in the field and do I use it right now to save my ass? Or do I try and survive and get it back to the lab where we can make something else into it?
Mm-hmm.
All of that sort of stuff is doing things that you were sort of thinking about in XCOM. Is it XCOM?
No.
So where does everybody fall on that game? And Prey 2 is the other game that everybody, the only thing that they say is, well, it looks way better.
Well, I think Prey 1, outside of Garnet, who loved it so much, most people thought Prey 1 was kind of a ridiculous combination of Native Americans and vagina doors. And suddly, Prey 2 is Blade Runner. So everyone's stoked.
It's awesome.
Maybe with the back touch on the Vita, they should do a Prey game, a Prey port.
Oh, God.
For the vagina noise. All right, we're going to take a little break because we need to get one more break in here before we hit out to the final segment in which we will talk about, wrap-ups, final impressions. Mr. Kanata will rejoin us, and everybody else who wanted to get in will get another shot. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Super Mega Worm. And it's fun to say. Super Mega Worm.
It is sort of
Super Mega Worm.
Fun to say. Super Mega Worm.
Super Mega Worm. Super Mega Worm.
What do I do as a Super Mega Worm?
You eat people.
Super Mega Worm.
Blow up planes and spaceships and shit.
Super Mega Worm.
Super Mega Worm.
Super Mega Worm.
Super Mega Worm.
You eat people.
Super Mega Worm. Blow up planes and spaceships and shit.
And it's fun to say.
Super Mega Worm.
It is sort of
Super Mega Worm.
Fun to say. Super Mega Worm.
Super Mega Worm. It's just deep. There's Super Mega women Worm. Pushing babies, and people will get scared and run, and they'll say things like, I just bought a new car.
Super Mega Worm.
Super Mega Worm doesn't care about your car.
Super Mega Worm.
Take my wife instead.
Super Mega Worm.
They care about your baby.
Super Mega Worm.
What?
Super Mega Worm.
And it's fun to say.
Super Mega Worm. Super Mega Worm.
Oh, no way.
Super Mega Worm.
In space.
Super Mega Worm.
Oh, no way.
Super Mega Worm.
In space.
Super Mega Worm.
It is sort of
Super Mega Worm.
Fun to say. Super Mega Worm. Who knew what a big deal Super Mega Worm was going
to
be when we did that?
And yet,
there it is. It's fun to say. And evidently, Prey 2 was fun to play because a lot of people have it as their surprise of the show.
Yeah, I have two surprises of the show. You know my other one. But Prey 2 was a huge surprise as far as, I kind of dissed the game going, nothing like Prey 1, but that's a good thing, it turns out.
Right.
Because it really seems like it delivers on the idea of being a bounty hunter and accomplishing missions in a variety of interesting, unique ways. The traversal is cool. Hover boots are always cool. There's bolos where you can wrap a guy up. There's this cool chase sequence that they showed.
That was my favorite part of it. I think that's so the only part I saw because I came in that part of the demo, but that chase scene was, okay, now you have my attention. It seemed like a very fluid, very exciting thing.
There's a very simple, cool mechanic that's in the game that I've always wondered about with first-person shooters that, in every first-person shooter, you walk around with a guy who's holding his gun out straight,
right.
And you just walk around holding my gun out straight. No one walks like that. And in this game, for the first time, you walk around without holding your gun up, and when you pull your gun out, it means something.
People react.
And they
Except it really doesn't mean anything. And this is my problem with the way they're approaching it, is that they put in this sort of
choice system and do I bully people or am I a good guy, this morality question stuff. But then they undermine it all by saying, you know what, we don't ever want to stop the game action. We don't want to prevent you from having a good experience in the game. So whatever choices you make, it's all going to work out okay and everything will be great.
Well, I hope that they dial up a little bit of the RPG-ness of the game. I like that, and I think that having more dynamic dialogue system and stuff than what they showed would be cool addition, but we'll see.
I don't really see them doing that, because keep in mind, like, what they're going for is hub and, is a open world on this weird space planet on the other side of the world, and giving you missions and letting you go and run through them. They want you to be caught up in the way it works. They want you to be caught up in using like that DNA tracker vision that they had, where you're like trying to chase down the guy who's your bounty. You know, you get this bounty.
It's awesome.
Like, it was cool. No, it's very cool. It's sort of Batman-y.
Yeah.
But it was cool because then you're in a shooter and they want you to be focused on all that part. And
wait,
I think,
is that another like overlay where only the stuff you need to care about?
Of course. That is a dangerous new trend is popping up.
Just to go back to Tomb Raider, which I actually thought looked great and was really, really excited about. Yeah, I was really sad that game has to have that. Like that it's like,
dude, that's survival.
This amazing environment and like these, you know, cool puzzles and whatever, but all you do is hit a button and then mine the glowy bits. Like, like I want to figure stuff out, especially in a game like Tomb Raider.
Future Soldier has it as well.
Yeah, I mean a lot. That's kind of the default thing to do right now, and I understand why they do it, because it wasn't fun either, just being stuck in a room, you know, for 15 or 20 minutes. But like, you know, I mean, that's what a game like Portal 2, that's what they spend their time doing, is making it so you do have to figure it out.
We are going to test you. We are going to challenge you.
Yeah, and in a, you know, in a way that you're not going to get too frustrated, but I want them to do the heavy lifting. I want them to make that part of the game design, you know?
You know, my other big surprise of the show, I don't know if anybody else saw it, was Saints Row the Third.
I did not
see it. I can't believe it either.
I can't believe it either.
It cracks me up. I don't know if you guys noticed it on the show floor.
Well, I was planning on ignoring it because
this had nothing to do with the car wash you got.
I did not get a car wash. I took the subway. Some people, you know, whatever.
Is that nothing to do with the buff job you got?
Yeah. I'm telling you, yes, it's all those jokes, it's all that crass humor. I was ready to completely ignore it and go, you know what, we don't even need this on our schedule, let's fill this with a different game. I'm so glad I went to that demo. It looks like unbelievable fun, really cool graphics style. The cutscenes that they showed were really well written and genuinely funny and interesting. And they're taking over the top. I mean, it's like, there is no top. It's so much.
Exactly. It is topless.
It's fully topless. Yeah.
And they will now be putting that on the back of every box.
I was really impressed with it. And
were you not
a
fan of Saints Row 2?
No, I've actually not played Saints Row 2, but I just, the whole culture of it, the whole idea of it just does a turn off to me.
It's whole Nods energy drink kind of mentality.
It's just not me,
right,
you know?
Right.
But this game seems to be in on its own joke enough that the fun it's having is infectious. You know, it's, you do these takedowns with people on the street and he ends in a pose like, yeah, I just took you down. And, you know, everyone is a fan of you. You're like this superstar in that world. So they're constantly asking for your autograph. And when you do effed up stuff to them, they laugh and love it. And, you know, oh, you just kicked me in the nuts. That's awesome. You know, it just seems so silly and over the top and it looks great.
Aren't you? Wait, I can't believe you're bringing that up, because you were the same person when I was talking about this game on the show where I said every weapon has a nut shot.
I know
that you were making fun of that. And now you're like,
I'm saying
people in the nuts. It's
I
funny.
I owe it an apology. I owe Saints Row an apology because I judged it by its cover and it really does seem like.
So you like kicking people in the nuts?
I don't think I'll kick people in the nuts a lot. I like all the other stuff that is going on.
You like
in that
dressing
universe
up in a pimp suit
or being naked. You can be naked.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. That game's gonna be huge, though. I mean, you know, THQ launching on November 15th is like, we think this is a quadruple A giant.
Well, obviously, we're going in right after 11/11. That's kind of
huge.
Kind of freaking insane.
It plays very well. Like, you know, flyover states, that kind of stuff too. Yeah.
Flyover states.
It's a strong red state base.
Oh man. All right. So Luke, how excited are you to go back to the world of Skyrim?
Oh, well, I didn't spend a whole lot of time in the world of Oblivion. So
I thought
liked
Oblivion.
I think when I talked about it before, I was trying to play it. I went through the first cave and got out into the world, and I was like, oh, wow, this looks awesome. Who can I talk to? It's like
everyone.
No. But like, who real can I talk to? I was coming off of a long stretch of playing MMOs, so the world felt empty, devoid of people. Right. At Skyrim, we saw a demo of, and I thought it looked great.
Yeah,
you didn't fall asleep.
I didn't know the room was really. It was very well heated. It was like curling up with
heated by natural nerd stank.
There was this one air conditioner in the back corner, which wasn't where we sat, and that thing was working really hard and maybe cooling the three people closest to it. It was like being at grandma's house. Mm. Got grandma telling you a story about sweet items and weapons, and their technology is actually really impressive because of some of the stuff they're doing. That like the ability to load all items from memory when you invoke the start menu and have the game world rendered underneath it is pretty powerful. So powerful to the point that when they have things like decorators pop in, you probably saw that on your demo, like, oh, the grass is fading in. Like, I don't care because you have all my items loaded in memory. Like, that's a trade-off I'm willing to make. Oh, and then instead of having a perfunctory like overworld map, you're gonna actually go to like a relief
that
map like you would have crafted in third
amazing.
Grade.
Amazing. It's fucking Google Earth for Elder
like actual
Scrolls.
Full 3D maps.
Yeah, so badass.
Like some of those choices that they made, like any of the trade-offs that they're gonna have in their technology, at least on the 360, like I'm willing to accept those because of the cool other decisions they made. They showed an amazingly over-leveled character where the guy's like, so we just got the flame wall spell. Now, this is a little bit different from the fireball spell and the fire wash spell and the flame gourd spell. And we're not going to look at those today, but this one, I'm like, what?
Well, you know, you don't really want to die while you're doing your demo. That doesn't really play very well.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It just doesn't play well.
Well, he called down an entire thunderstorm against a dragon. And that was badass.
Yeah.
So do you think you'll get involved in this one then, since you've been away from MMOs? Do you like the idea that all of the characters now in the game that you encounter are part of their storytelling system as opposed to just like walking down a scripted line?
Actually, the thing that got me was the ability to fuck with the local economy.
Mm.
Like,
okay.
I want to that's be one of the first things I test out. That little Riverwood town, if it doesn't say like King Luke, it was like 2 hours of me arriving. Like,
or everyone.
Like, yeah, like, but so long, bitches. That lumberyard, gone. Out.
Burned down.
Yeah, fuck it.
Well, I think it's going to be really interesting to also see. Obviously, they're very interested in developing sort of that that equivalent to having people you talk to that are more fleshed out, more real. And I think that'll play big into one thing they haven't talked about at all is the guild system. And the guild system was really big in Oblivion. I know that, like.
Well, he kind of mentioned it in passing. He's like, this is the city that you're going to have the Warriors Guild in.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about becoming King Luke, I think a big part of that might be rising through the guild system and figuring out how the guilds can manage different towns and where they're real. The sphere of influences.
Is there? And I always play as a chick, so am I going to be able to do guys?
I'm sure you will.
Or chicks.
I mean,
or
I don't know that in the lineage of Oblivion, is there boning? Is that like a thing?
It's more of a Witcher thing.
Like, I know in Witcher, I'm just DTF constantly. I'm like, I'm going to rescue this chick. We're going to bang afterwards. Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
You got to always have the good payoff. Always have the good payoff.
I'm going to pay it off right here.
Oh. So they really are leaving like the witch sex in the 360 version, because that would get an adults only rating from the ESRB. It really would. I'm pretty sure
it's already rated here on PC. Why would the rating change?
It got mature for that.
It got mature.
Wow,
it is mature rated. It's already rated here.
Pushing the boundaries.
And people. So I actually brought up this idea that maybe Microsoft would ask them to change the content. People were like, "No, they won't do that. That's what the ESRB is for." And I said, well, really? Okay. Tell that to the platform holder. I'm sure that they really are concerned whether the ESRB is going to be cover their back.
I'm impressed. More adult situations in games. It's exciting.
Yeah.
Well said.
What was well said?
Adult situations are exciting.
Adult beverages are also fantastic.
Yeah, it's almost time to start drinking, but we're almost done, right?
We have 17 more
minutes.
We're
almost back
to
being the...
We're almost back to having the original crew. So,
nod.
Wait. Before Mr. Kanata leaves.
I can take a hint.
Wow.
Wow, that was rude.
Wow, that was very vicious. Like, Shane's like,
I got to go back to work.
You have to go back. I have to go back to work as well. I got totally derailed. I had something. Oh, you asked me about Star Trek because that was one of my surprises.
Well, yeah, that was a kind of a big surprise.
I'm not going to say it's like my game of the show or anything, but like.
It didn't suck?
It didn't suck.
That's good.
Like, between the. Like, you hear Star Trek game and you immediately go, oh, that's going to be bad.
So I didn't see it. What, I mean, apart from the trailer that did absolutely nothing to display what the game is really going to be, it's a shooter, right?
It's definitely a shooter. It's absolutely a.
Shock.
Co-op is the focus of
it. It's an adventure shooter.
Spock and Kirk, right?
Heavily. And this is like something we were talking about, like, we did our video wrap up yesterday. Is that one thing I guess I hadn't thought? I've only watched. Have you watched the J.J. Abrams Star Trek very
it's
much?
Spectacular.
Yeah.
So I've watched it once, and I sort of forgot that sort of the part of the reimagining is that they're younger and there's still like this like budding buddy thing going on between Kirk and Spock, where like Kirk is the like flamboyant wild dude who's always screwing shit up, and Spock.
Yeah, this
is
was a very popular movie 2 years ago when it came out.
Yeah, so I'm just saying. That's what I'm saying. Is
sequel comes out next fall.
I'm saying I had completely forgotten about that part, and that it plays very well for the co-op part of the game, right? So you know, now you actually have this trade-off between these two characters who aren't just like two army of two dudes who are looking for a wall where I can reach down and.
Was there a fist pump between Spock and Kirk?
There was no fist pumping between the two.
So do you think people are going to argue over who gets to be the fun one, and who has to be like the pointy-eared guy?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I think
I want to be the bro.
Do they behave differently, or are they just two characters that just look different? I mean, are they playing into the...
They definitely behave differently. So they behave differently, and something that they were saying that Paramount got on them about is that each of the characters has to be able to experience the events that happen inside the game that are like the story moments from their own perspective and see it the way they would have it, and not just have like drop to cutscene and everybody sees cutscene. Mm. They have to have it where... If you're Spock, you're Spock, and you are where you are, and you have your take on it. And if you're Kirk, you're Kirk, and you have your take on it.
Sounds like a great opportunity for a Wii U.
Jesus.
Hold the screen up.
Too bad it's exclusive to the PlayStation 3.
Mm. Is it exclusive to PS3?
Yeah.
Transfer that shit.
Transferring. So,
and it's being built by Digital Extremes, which I'm sort of like neither here nor there on. I mean, they've done okay stuff. They did a lot of the Unreal Tournament stuff, which mm-hmm. was pretty good. They did...
The Krull thing.
The Krull thing, which people initially liked, but then...
Something.
Dark Sector.
Dark Sector. Yeah, which I was sort of nonplussed by. So, I don't know. Oh. All right. Moving on... What else should we move on to?
I'll talk about them super briefly. I played Bastion.
Oh, I love that game.
And Crimson Alliance. And those were the two games I spent a bunch of time with at the live arcade booth. And they were both fantastic.
I was surprised how aggressively Bastion was getting promoted for a downloadable game.
Yeah.
Well, then Ubi's gotten behind. I mean, Warner's gotten behind it.
Banners outside and big displays inside.
And good for them. Like, yeah. You know, our old friend Greg Kasabin's over there working on it. And he seems super happy and excited to be working on it. And the idea of having a narrator while you're going through a game, it sounds goofy, but then you play it and it's fucking fantastic.
Awesome. I really liked how the narrator sounded like a guy from the Wild West. Like, I felt like I was playing True Grit, kind of, but you know... As an elf or whatever I am, like wielding a big sword and shooting arrows.
It was bringing back to me like memories of the Big Lebowski.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
And the dude came by. And you're like, wow, that's kind of awesome. I like this idea.
And Patrick was standing there while I was playing, and he said that the early part of the game is really tutorial heavy, and there's a lot of talking from that guy. And as the game goes on, he's going to like sort of fade out and fade in. Like, there's not going to be as much of a
because then you're telling
dialogue.
Your story by playing it.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
The second I don't think the second time through the game I want to hear everything. You know, like
right.
I mean, really, am I going to replay it? I'm going to play it once.
And you know what a loot whore I am. I went and played Torchlight 2, and...
How was it?
Oh, God, I fucking love that game. So love that game. And matter of fact, I had the experience where I was, like, playing it, and I fell into playing it, and I realized, like, I actually, like, pushed the keyboard and mouse away from me. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing sitting here at E3, like, just totally entranced playing this?
Does it have multiplayer now?
Yes, it totally has multiplayer. Awesome. So it's multiplayer, it's online multiplayer. They're being published by Perfect World. There's no word on console, unfortunately.
Okay, I was going to say, is it sim shipping or anything? But it's not.
No, it's like no word on the console, but they did announce here that they're going to support LAN play now as well. So you'll be able to, like, this will be fun for old school PC LAN play.
Totally. Yeah.
And it looks fucking gorgeous. All new character classes, tons of, it's more of Torchlight, but it's what you wanted out of it. It's like got the multiplayer. It's got the online. Tons of new characters.
Right.
Awesome.
Mm. You can control two dogs. You have a litter.
Are you trying to think of other games?
I'm trying to think of other games we saw that we've not talked about.
I'm kind of sad that I didn't actually play Zelda Skyward Sword. Because like last year at E3, I was kind of down on it. And then at GDC, it looked better. And like I'm definitely excited for it, but I'm still trying to muster up the real old-fashioned Zelda excitement. And the 25th anniversary symphony stuff, like when I was there at the press conference hearing the symphony, that did kind of, you know, the old passion was bubbling up again.
Yeah.
So hopefully I can the full flower of the evening will bloom by November.
Luke, like he's serving it up to you, buddy. You need an opening that's a little tighter to get into?
I'm not going to buy the gold-plated Wiimote.
Like Billy Berghammer was really excited about that.
He was really excited about the old controller.
The guy who formed Nintendo Wii Report, like World Report, was really into something Nintendo.
He might go out and re-get his ears pierced. He was that kind of excited.
Wow, you know, something that I think got most maybe the most attention, and I don't know that we would have thought this going in, is Assassin's Creed. That really people are chomping at the bit for more.
Well, who couldn't be excited about it when that guy hypes you up at the press conference like he did?
Mr. Caffeine.
Got me amped.
Yeah.
He's mainlining caffeine. I was psyched.
And so, does it look...
So this Assassin's Creed has both guys wearing hoods, right? But one of them has...
Two guys wearing hoods.
One has a beard.
And the previous trilogy has now become an... This is the trilogy of Ezio, which is the third game. So the fifth game...
It's a meta trilogy.
There's five
games.
Trilogy
within a trilogy.
And Assassin's Creed 3 is still coming.
Oh.
Yeah.
And Assassin's Creed 3 will be a different character's story.
Is this game called Assassin's Creed Revelations?
It is.
And there's also Resident Evil Revelations? Let's fix that. That's not good.
And both of them are good.
I know, but it's kind of a...
Go figure.
A lot of revelations.
The revelations. We can't wait till 2012, obviously. The first one missed, so we're just going to go for Revelations in 2012 now.
Yeah. Did anyone play Assassin's Creed?
It's
more Assassin's Creed.
Right. I only got the demo. I didn't actually sit and play it.
The setting is new, right?
I was convinced at first that trailer was live action until he took his hood off, which was kind of spooky.
All right.
But in terms of game, it's the same thing.
Did anybody play Deus Ex? That looks pretty.
Well, come on. Now, you know that... So, during the break...
Luke's face we just were did all, something strange.
I was listening to everybody rail about how Deus Ex was... Well, they didn't want... The quote, I guess, was, let's hope Prey 2 doesn't become this year's Deus Ex, where it shows great this year, and then next year you're like, oh, what the hell happened to this thing? So, a lot of folks down on Deus Ex after this.
Big time.
Why? So, give me some...
What's up, Luke?
Speak up. We need to know, the listeners want to know why
that
is.
There's a pretty long line, so I didn't get to check it out.
Okay. I will tell you my conjecture from having played it. I think that what they showed was later in the game. Yeah. So it's a complex game in the first place. So it requires, the section they showed requires that you have played the game, know how to use the powers, know the way you set your character up, because it does have that element of building your character.
Is it going to scale anything about him? Because you start out fully tooled up. I mean, are they...
Yes, if you go into that, you don't start off. You start off in that demo powered up because you needed to be because of where you were.
The game, one of the hooks of the game was that he's like badass from the
beginning.
He's
sort of badass, right? But there's still, when you go into the inventory screen, when you go into the power screen, there's still a tremendous amount of bio enhancements for you to choose from and where you put your points and how you build up those abilities. That's a big part of the game, is tailoring you to the way you want to play.
I do like the look. The cutscenes.
The amber haze.
Yeah, the amber haze. I don't know. For some reason, I'm actually associating it with haze now.
And that's
really off-putting.
Yeah, it's not
good. That is
not a good association.
That is more than a little bit off-putting.
But it's not a reflection on what's going on in the game. There's just something about the look of it is like reminding me of things that I've not liked in the past. And that definitely tainted my observations of it.
Anybody else?
A lot of people saying that they just thought it was kind of convoluted in the way that it was doing things, and that the structure of it felt too scripted
poorly crafted demo for a trade event. Just like another game we haven't hardly spoken about it. I'm really still optimistic that Resistance 3 can make a comeback, but I thought that the slice that they showed in the press conference was dismal.
It took me 5 minutes to get over the raindrops coalescing in front of my field of vision, because that was part of their 3D presentation, and that gimmick, it's neat for like a second, but I was like,
enough with the 3D.
See, and I saw it from home, and it looked fine. We weren't at the press conference, and it actually looked, the videos that they showed over the air, Uncharted versus Resistance, the Resistance thing looked fine, looked good.
What I'm saying, Luke,
is that you guys experienced locally there sounds like it was totally different.
What I'm saying is, in Resistance 3, they're trying to get back some of the interest in the narrative of it, and not just be brown shooter with aliens where you're killing dudes, right? But that's all they showed. They didn't bring in any of this, journeys. Like, they say they have this great narrative with a journey story, and you're going to be into Capelli, and he's going to be much more humanized because it's not a big military conflict. But all I saw was dude running through abandoned buildings shooting aliens.
I mean, it looked good, but yeah.
Yeah. But it was just dude running through buildings shooting aliens, and I think that they had an opportunity to give this thing more personality, more identity, and bring me back in.
I'm more excited for Overstrike, although I didn't actually see any gameplay. I just thought the idea sounds better.
I was surprised, though, by Sony's crazy PlayStation-branded 3D TV that's bundled with Resistance 3 for $4.99.
Great deal.
That has, the split-screen thing.
The use of two-channel display to do same couch multiplayer but with a full screen is really cool.
Yeah.
How close do you have to sit, though, when your TV's 24 inches away? You're like, You're up on it, right?
I don't know.
It's for dorm rooms.
It's for dorm rooms.
TV. Yeah.
But, okay, you know, the big no-show at the press conference was Twisted Metal, but you played it, and you said you played a boss that was really hard.
I played two things upstairs at Sony that were that I was really, like stunned by. The boss battle that I played in Twisted Metal stunned me because it's vicious.
Hard.
It is really brutal. You played a Sweet Tooth, and you were fighting this giant...
flaming skull
flying. Well, that's the end of it. It starts. It starts off as a giant.
But you actually giant... you just hit on it. It actually has one.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like a giant mecha baby.
Go
doll.
Again. Try another one. Say, like, what else do you think he's got?
A dude who's attached to two giant wheels. Oh, is that kidding?
Anyway, just like it really, it embodies this idea that they're trying to get back to super old school if you want it. Like, the one thing I asked him, I'm like, look, there's no way if I didn't have God mode on that I would enjoy this, because it's one of those bosses where it's like, okay, first you need to take out the thing that powers its shields. And after you take out the thing that powers its shields, then you have to get the thing so that you can power up the rocket so you can fire the rocket at it. And you have to do like three or four rockets before you beat it the first time.
I think
but then it comes back another time.
I think they've mismanaged and misread, like, both the audience and everything about this game. I think they think that it's a bigger deal than it really is, and I think that the way that they've shown it, most people come away from it turned off now. Like, and it's like it's been over a year that we've been like they've been trying to convince us that Twisted Metal's back and it's a really big deal. And most of the audience is like they're either like the younger guys are like, I didn't play the first one, so I don't give a shit. And then the rest of us are like, I don't have the time for playing something that hardcore anymore.
Yeah.
If you recall, that was the big reveal at the end of last year's press conference.
And we were all supposed to go, holy shit, oh my God, it's coming back. And like it wore off and now it's back, and like they didn't even put it in the press conference, which I thought was kind of telling.
But the selection of what went into the press conference was odd in the first place.
Didn't tell us what any of the stuff in the video at the end was either. Mm-hmm. Like, that pissed you off? Your game was in there and didn't even
have
a name.
There was a little porthole, like, left center where logos were appearing that was not part of the screen. So you had to be watching over there.
I was way over on the side and couldn't see that.
So that was kind of...
That's messed up.
Well, I'm curious. Overall, I want everybody to
I can tell you the other one, because the other game, and I would have sure had this being a big presentation, Starhawk. Starhawk is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It is so
awesome. It looks cool, but it doesn't look like Warhawk.
It's not Warhawk exactly. Yeah. I love all the pieces that they're putting together in different ways to make this game. So
and it's cowboys in space, which is kind of cool.
Cowboys in space, which is awesome, has a single player component, but the single player component builds off of what they do in multiplayer and also brings in the co-op element, and then they have the multiplayer part, which has like I like that, and this is definitely the messaging that they're making. So I'll cop to that, but it makes sense is that they're pulling from the idea of tower defense to bring in the base building part. And that's really cool. We
if
like tower defense.
They push that
games.
Over the edge. All they need now is to have Nathan Fillion do one of the voices, and they get all the Firefly fans on board. Cowboys in space doing the brown coat war.
It is very strategy. It's very Firefly, actually.
Yeah.
Wow.
But you can build stuff anywhere. Like I watched him do like this. Like so, Dylan, who's like the studio director, I guess, at Lightbox, was doing the demo for me. He gave me like an hour long demo. It was awesome. Thanks very much, Dylan. That was really awesome. And you can build anytime, including like while you're in Hawk form, you can build. So and you can build anywhere. So if you have like forces advancing on an enemy, you can come flying in with your Hawk and drop like a sniper tower at the front of your advance and have it build right there at the front of your advance.
How many players simultaneously?
It is 16 player.
Cool. Is it next year? It's next year, right?
It's 16 player, and they're hosting all of the servers on Blades in their own data center. And they're also going to, and they're like, you know what? Like, one of the things that people say about the Hawk series is it feels more like a PC game than a console game. Yeah. And they're cool with that.
Yeah,
can I drive with six axis still?
I don't know. I didn't ask that. To the extent that they aren't just doing matchmaking, they still have server browser, and they're very into server browser, and they're also going to support setting up your own private matches. And when you set up your own private matches, it will spawn on their Linux blades at the data center. So you want to make, if we get together and all of our friends, we want to make a match of our own Starhawk, set it up with whatever parameters we want to. We do that, we password protect it, create match, it creates on the Linux blade server back at Sony headquarters in San Diego, and we have our own dedicated server game. That's fucking badass.
Wow.
That is seriously
gaming
awesome.
Like you gamed 15 years ago.
All right, before we get towards the end, I want to say what my most shocking disappointment of E3 2011 was.
Okay.
What?
Mario 3D.
Yeah.
Mario 3D is a disappointment?
AKA like Crash Bandicoot for GBA.
Crash? Whoa!
Like,
yeah.
It isn't what I wanted. Like, I need to play more, but it seems like a weird step sideways and back, and like, he's too big on screen, and he runs slowly, and you can't change the camera. I don't know. It's...
Yeah, when they were making a big deal about it, it's a bunch of the talent that worked on Super Mario Galaxy. For that group, it's definitely a step back in terms of the imagination.
All right. So, John, you have some wrap-up thoughts, as long as we're, like, spooling
Are we doing disappointments?
Yeah, I don't know.
Let's do most shocking disappointment.
All right, most shocking disappointment.
I need to think about this.
Well, mine's not shocking, but I will say that I held out some hope that at least in the trailer there would be a glimpse of Last Guardian. I mean, I was holding out hope. Well, and I know it's, like, stupid to have that hope.
At least we're getting Ico and Shadow of the Colossus at the same time as Japan in September. That's good news.
And I played Ico upstairs. Ico translated to HD really well. It's really nice to see that game in HD. It's not, they didn't reimagine the geometry. It still has,
it's clean. It looks clean.
But it looks clean and nice. And I really like it.
Play it in 3D?
I'm not a huge 3D fan, and it didn't bother me because they're being very low key with the 3D effect. They're not like trying to push it to where it's like giant, super depth of field. They're just using a little depth of field effect. It works. It's fine.
Last Guardian is a complete no show. It's kind of lame.
Yeah.
It's not a disappointment, but I did want to talk a little bit about how I feel that Mass Effect 3 is going to transpire, because what I've enjoyed about the previous Mass Effects, they're compressing the bits that I like down to a point where I don't think they're going to exist at all in 3.
I'm with you.
So, like, what I really liked is that there was a narrative within where it was slow enough in terms of inevitability that you could go and do the detective stuff and the tracking down the scientist who's researching the thing that affects the other thing, who's married to the woman who thinks he's having an affair. That's not going to happen in Mass Effect. The Reapers are eating Earth. Let me just go over here and see if I can find this woman.
Shit got husband. Real.
Yeah.
Well, keep in mind, we did go off on all kinds of side missions before Mass Effect while the universe was in dire threat.
Yeah,
so.
But the dire threat was moving slowly through the universe. Now the big, weird hand puppet monsters are eating into the planet.
You have to collect allies again.
Yes, I know.
You didn't go like, let's all stick together for a while.
Wait, come back.
Tattooed bald chick had shit to do.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Smith.
I don't know. My pre-E3 disappointment. It's not really a disappointment, but I really would have liked to have seen a real proper E3 Metal Gear 5.
Mark McDonald transferring over there.
Yeah, I like the video before. Mark can't defend himself because he doesn't have a mic. The video before was like, I was hoping it was all a ruse and that, Mark was going to walk on stage at Sony and like there was going to be a box and Hideo was going to pop out of the box and tap Mark on the shoulder and it was going to be like, that's,
fooled you again.
And it just starts. Yeah. And then the trailer starts.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
And my perpetual disappointment, which I think is going to just happen forever, is No Colony Wars.
Mm.
What the fuck?
Colony Wars.
And by the way,
awesome music.
Anytime Relic wants to do a new Homeworld, I'd be okay with that too. Please. Thank you.
That's never going to happen.
Anytime. Why do you say never?
I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Hmm. Yeah. All right, so wrap it up. Like final thoughts, Mr. Bettenhausen. Do you have any final thoughts on the E3s?
Well, I think overall, I was happy with it. I think I'm happy with all the HD collections that are coming out. It's kind of just a bunch of shovelware, but the shovelware I'm going to buy. The Metal Gear, Zone of Enders, Eco Shadow, all these things, Silent Hill. I think that the 3DS. I think Nintendo realized it needs a lot of software, and I think they announced a lot of first-party stuff.
So they're just retreading all their old stuff?
Yeah, but I'm still the jury's still out. I think something has to change with the price or the bundle this Christmas. I think, it was a good E3, but not a super winner, like a B+.
All right, John, what do you, a little close thought there?
I mean, I thought it was a really good shot, and in terms of like sort of big games, I think it was one of the best in terms of the spread. But, I mean, it was really noticeable this year that you have the big, mega-budget, massive AAA game. There's a lot of them that people, Assassin's Creed, Modern Warfare, Battlefield 3, there's a long list of those. And then there's a huge gap in the market. And then there's the Bastions and the Papuanios and the quirky.
Stuff,
and that middle ground of that sort of no man's land in the middle is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Definitely. Luke? Nothing?
Pretty much what was expected. Like, just...
Same old.
Nothing... Like really, just not a lot of surprises overall. And like, I feel exactly about the Nintendo stuff the way I thought I would. Like, I'm still right. Still
Luke was still right.
Luke still right. There's a shocker.
I think the hardware in general, like across the board, is starting to show its age.
Yeah.
And it's time for things to start moving forward.
I can get on board with that, definitely.
Yeah.
Show's too damn big. It's back to being a
a complete mess.
There were 47,000 people.
Yeah, and I also hate the behind closed doors everything. Like, yeah, I talked to like, a bunch of my friends who came down here from work, and they're like, "Oh, what have you seen?" And I'm like, "Well, I've I got to see all the stuff." Like, blah blah blah. And they're like, "How'd you get like if you don't know anyone, you're screwed." And it's just a terrible like, don't come.
Decide
like don't come.
Well. Let's get on with it, ESA. Decide what the hell you want E3 to be. Do you want it to be a trade show where there's working business like between buyers and sellers and between media and publishers? Or do you want to have a big media circus with mainstream media and the public attending? Or do you want to do both like Gamescom? Gamescom works great. Mm-hmm. Look into it. It's not that tough. So that's it.
That's kind of negative ending there.
Yeah. No, not negative. Like, I'm just
saying. Get your shit together, E3.
Just get your shit together. It's really tough. It's really tough for us to make it through. It's a grueling show, and I really want to focus on the games and have that good time.
I don't think we're getting much sympathy on
but
that.
It sucks. Yeah. We will be digging out. Like,
you got to spend all week looking at games that aren't coming out yet, and you don't like that? Yeah,
but no, I like that. No, that part I like. It's just I don't like it being really tough to do. And on that note, if you want to hear more about like racing games such as Forza 4, FIFA 20, FIFA. We can talk about FIFA.
FIFA 28, that racing game looks fantastic.
But F1 2011, both of which I thought took very good strides. Tell me that you'd like to talk about it. These guys, obviously, I don't think there's another racing fan in the room here that much. John, sort of. Are you still racing?
He's British. He should like both of those.
Yeah, big racing fan.
Forza 4 looks really good, doesn't it?
It does, but they don't know what it wants. Much like everything else Microsoft's doing right now, they don't know what it wants to be. It's like,
no.
Oh, yeah, my quote of the show was during the press conference, actually, which was like, there's more to fun and games than fun games. The Xbox 360 is all about games.
that is pretty circular. And we do a lot of circular stuff here. So, now everyone, thanks so much. I am like really blessed to have such a good group of friends with Luke and Shane and John and Mark and Andrew and Jeff Cannata back here in the back. So, guys, just thank you very much for taking the time out to do this with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yay, round of applause.
Woo! We're awesome.
Let's do this next year with liquor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or later in the day.
Yeah.
Later in the day, yes. I agree. I agree on both counts. And on that note, until next week, that is Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop. My shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine.
Try to stop me, but they don't get close, so they do it from a distance.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.